This is PFW in Progress.
Everything I do turns into a disaster. I guess I really don't know what Christmas is all about.
Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?
PFW in Progress.
All right, quiet everybody. Our director will be here any minute and we'll start rehearsal.
Here he comes. Attention everyone, here's our director.
With Fred Kirsch.
Oh no, we're doomed.
Paul Perillo.
Rats. Nobody sent me a Christmas card today. I almost wish there weren't a holiday season. I know nobody likes me. Why do we have to have a holiday season to emphasize it?
And Andy. And Andy?
I think there must be something wrong with me, Linus. Christmas is coming, but I'm not happy. I don't feel the way I'm supposed to feel.
Andy Hart.
I like getting presents and sending Christmas cards and decorating trees and all that, but I'm still not happy.
I'm never happy.
Some guy named Tom.
Rats.
You've been dumb before, but this time you really did it.
Oh, everything I touch gets ruined.
And you never know.
Lori might stop by.
That's right. What about my part? What about the Christmas Queen, Are you going to let all this beauty go to waste?
PFW in Progress.
Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown!
All right. Welcome back. We're here. PFW in Progress. It's Wednesday, and we are coming off one of the most bizarre endings, last 3 minutes of a football game that we've seen in Patriot Nation, so we can't wait to talk about it with you, our loyal listeners here in PFW in Progress. The email address is webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. Phone number is 508-543-7482. Andy, Paul, Tom, Fred, Gary's in the booth. We're all here. And guys, what do you think? Are we still looking at 16-0, or is this?
We'll
a
find
team?
Out this Sunday, we'll as see. I expected we would all along.
So if they win this game, that's it.
Yes,
this is the regular season, right?
That's what I've said all along. From day one, I circled this game, and it played out exactly how I thought
it
would.
Blow them out.
I think
shut him up.
To answer your question, I think 16-0.
Just so you know, I thought all along they'd win the game. But I thought this would be their toughest because of the reason that's played out.
I thought they'd be slowed down,
beat up, coming off these night games.
Well, you thought it was
Ravens.
The toughest because it was the toughest team on their schedule.
Yeah, but that's the thing,
Fred. I said the three-game stretch. You didn't listen, do you? You never listen.
One of the things that I think it's so hard to go 16-0 is because you look at it on paper, well, of course they're better than all these teams. So were the 85 Bears. So were the Broncos. But the emotional strain, all these teams. You know what I heard sitting in the Baltimore waiting for Billick to come out from the writers? This is all I heard. Well, if they played like this all season, they wouldn't be 4-8. Teams, they can make history too. The Jets can make history by beating the Patriots.
That's
everybody can save their season by ending this
run. Everybody.
And I think it's very hard emotionally for the Patriots because they have to be on top of their game every single week.
That's a really good point that I think all four of us really overlooked in the last couple of weeks.
And I was talking to Bilo because he was sitting next to me during the game.
That's too bad.
And, you know, it was kind of like this game was, you know, there was so many things that happened just right for the Patriots to win.
So you
the
say
game.
They won by luck.
So many things that happened.
you just did a Fred. That's a Fred you just did on him.
What do you mean by luck?
So many things had to happen just right.
Well, if that's what you call luck, then I guess you can call it luck.
And it's almost like, you know, when a pitcher pitches a perfect game, there's always a one or two defensive plays within the game. And, you know, I don't know it, but I'd imagine if we went back to that 72 season and looked at the games that Miami won, I bet you there's a few things in that season that allowed them.
They had some close games. They had a one-point game over a 4-10 Buffalo team, I think. I
mean,
they had some close calls.
So it's going to be like this. You're not going to blow through and be 16-0, and we've already seen
I don't think
that.
You're going to ask any team to blow everybody out.
No, you can't.
It's just not.
Yeah.
It's not plausible.
So, you know what? I'm picking the Patriots to beat Pittsburgh, but I really think that the Jets could have a chance to beat this team. I really do.
I agree.
Not
with you.
Because the Jets are better. Because
that's
this
one game. It's their Super Bowl.
It's funny. And Tom made
it's
the comment.
Also Bill's Super Bowl, though.
Tom made the comment. I think, you know, I'm not sure if it was you, Tom, but I think it was you that said a couple of weeks ago, I actually give the Jets a better chance to beat the Patriots than I think it was Baltimore.
Yeah, Baltimore.
And I agree. I totally agreed with him at the time. Now, obviously, the way the Baltimore game played out, I don't think I'm going to be right about that. But I agreed with what Tom's feeling was. There are NFL teams, and there's a level of talent for everybody.
Right.
And when you band together, and the way Tom put it, I think, is exactly right. other teams have a chance to make history, too. You will remember the team that beat the team that almost went undefeated, just like we remember Miami did it to Chicago.
Who beat the Bears?
And the Giants.
Miami.
Right. Who Giants, beat Denver? The Giants. A bad Giants team.
Right.
A four-win Giants team. You remember.
The Steelers beat San Fran when they went 15-1.
I just looked in at Gary, and Gary and I shake our heads. I didn't know
NFL fans. I should have qualified
I know the Dolphins.
I should have said NFL fans.
Giants,
we'll remember
nothing.
That. Anyway, but I think that the way Tom put it, I think, is right on.
Well,
teams have a chance to make history.
Vikings.
What's that, Gary?
Who beat the 15-1
Tampa
Vikings?
Tampa Bay. I know that because I
bet
I bet on the Vikings that week. Of course, I think that was the only time all year I bet the Vikings. 24-20.
The other thing about that one that's a little different is the Vikings weren't
didn't win the Super Bowl.
And they weren't also on the cusp of going, you know, they weren't 12-13, 14-0 when they lost. The way some of the other teams were. Like, Denver was 13-0.
Who was the first team to beat the Colts a few years back when they were like 12?
San Diego.
Yeah.
I knew that one.
But, Paul, if you
Andy.
But if you had told me not, like, I thought that, you know, Baltimore was tailor-made for the Patriots.
Yeah.
And if you had told me they were going to play that way, I would have gave you my house, my car, anything you wanted that they wouldn't stay
close. I couldn't
agree
more.
Running Willis McGahee up the gut. Andy and I on the way there, we heard a radio talk show host saying that's what they were going to do. Andy was cleaning off his resume to send to Baltimore radio station. Saying anybody could work. We were laughing at the person. Just running McGahee up the middle, we were saying that's how you're going to try to beat the Patriots? No way. And it almost did. It almost worked.
Why?
I don't know. They couldn't stop the run. Well, I'd like to thank, we should, you know, say thank you, and we should have sent something to Richard Seymour, who retired 2 years ago. He just didn't tell anybody.
He really has not played, he hasn't done a thing, Fred.
Do we read into the fact that he rotates, that he's not healthy or not in shape, or do we read anything into that?
I think it's because he's not playing well.
Could be.
I mean, that doesn't mean you're wrong. I'm just saying I think that he's not playing well.
He told us he was healthy.
Look, and I also would say, and I think that the larger point about Seymour is dead on. Tom's been on that for a while. I'm going to put all of them in. By all of them, I don't just mean the three starters. I'm going to include Jarvis Green and Mike Wright because all five of those guys played a lot the other night, and none of them.
I don't
none
include
of them
Mike
had,
Wright in there.
But none of them had any success.
Mike
you don't
Wright's
include Mike Wright
backup.
Because he can't play.
Right. He's an underpaid backup.
But he was out on the field, and there was no difference in any of them.
He's not paid to stop Willis McGahee when they get into a dogfight
like that.
But when
he plays
like
well, we
the
talk
other three
about
guys
how deep
are paid
they
are. Very
right.
well.
That's my point about that.
Exactly, because he's a nice little player.
Well, the thing
those
about,
other guys are paid
the thing,
significant
the thing
dollars
Seymour,
to win games up front.
The thing
front.
About Seymour, my first game here was actually the Pittsburgh game a couple years ago, and I had heard, you know, how great Seymour was, but he's not the guy you really see on TV. That game, I was like, wow,
he
this
was great
guy
that
really
day.
Is phenomenal. I mean, he can't be stopped, and I don't know if I've seen
and
a
now.
Game like that since.
Yeah, the only thing I would say in his defense, possibly, is what Andy just touched on. Maybe all these knee injuries, and he's had
are slowing
three,
him down.
He's had two or three of them now over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. Maybe that they're taking a toll.
And not just
he just doesn't
down.
Have any explosion.
He's a big guy who has to get lower.
That
they always talk about the
his
knee
pad
bend.
Leverage, his pad
and
leverage.
Knee bend, getting the power.
Pad
if
level.
He loses a little of that, he's not the same
that's
guy.
The that's a good point, Andy. A knee injury on Willis McGahee might take away some of his speed, but he can still do other
right.
things. When you're a big guy like that, if you take away that power, that burst, it takes you from an elite player to just a
yep.
good player.
Well, it's interesting. But when the Patriots finally were able to stop McGahee in the fourth quarter, who was the main factor?
Rodney Harrison.
Rodney Harrison up near the line. Definitely.
Yeah, they just put 11 up in the box and dared Baltimore to beat them, and Baltimore ran right into it. I think that the key play, in my opinion, was out of those last three drives, the first one after the long punt return, Bowler throws the pick to James Sanders at the goal line. Terrible, terrible, terrible throw by Bowler. There was underthrown by 15 yards,
mm-hmm.
realistically.
I saw a receiver on the field, Paul, somewhere.
I don't know if it was underthrown, overthrown.
It was underthrown. He was going for
it
the
underthrown.
He was going for the guy in the end zone coming yeah. across the back line. And the, ball got, and the ball got picked off at about the 5.
There, I would say there were 4 Patriots closer than the receiver.
No doubt. So I think that play said to Billick, you know what, I have a chance to beat this undefeated team. I'm going to make sure that Kyle Bowler doesn't cost me that chance.
I would have been scared of letting my quarterback throw after that play, too.
Yeah, but I think that, like Tom said, you didn't have to throw on 3rd and 10s. You could have thrown
right.
on 1st and 10 or on you know, like the way the situation, the 2nd and 3. You do it in ways that he's not going to cost you instead of that way.
Yeah, but if he's 15 yards off on 1st down, it might get picked.
But
you know
Andy,
what I mean?
That's
I would have. And Tom
was.
Said this before the snap, and I agreed at the time. on that third and 10 play down around the 30-yard line,
I would have ran it.
I would have run the ball.
Right. And kick, try the field
and
goal.
If they can't get the field goal, then maybe I would have just punted and you know, tried to play field position or gone for it again on fourth down the way they did earlier in the game where that pick might not cost you as much.
My guess is that was a field position win condition decision.
Right.
That they said, if we're going to run it, we need to get the first down base. You know, they were in a position where they couldn't kick a
field
goal.
They were saying we can't kick one
right,
from
yeah.
here.
And
if that was good weather, they probably would have ran it up
right.
the middle and kicked
right.
the field goal. But,
after that, just running into that defensive front to me was foolish.
Yeah,
because there was no way that wasn't any increase, in my opinion, on the Patriots' defensive part. It was just a matter of bodies.
Right. And Andy, you said.
And Rodney came up with a big play.
You said them, you know, not wanting Bowler to throw. I thought a screen pass would have worked great there with mm-hmm. everybody at the line. That way it's safe. If it doesn't work, it's just an incomplete pass, most likely. And plus, when they got the ball back, they got 7 yards on first down. They had two plays to get 3 yards.
Yep.
They ended up losing yardage. I mean, that's what really ended the game, was right there.
How much of a factor was the win, do you think?
Oh, huge. Huge factor.
Yeah, it was downplayed all around, but I agree. I think it was a huge factor.
Huge factor.
In the passing game or kicking?
For people who were there, they know how windy that was. And to me, that's the only thing that can hurt the passing game. Snow, rain, I think he can still throw in that stuff. But when
you
have 40-mile-an-hour winds like was at that stadium, it's hard to throw the football.
And it it was inconsistent because it seemed like players struggled to get a read on it.
It was going
we
all
saw
over
punt
the place.
And kick returns where guys misjudged it and were scrambling. Ellis Hobbs was running forward on a kick that was blowing over his head.
And the same thing happened to Welker, only he ended up catching it over his shoulder for a fair catch.
So I think they couldn't get a read on what the wind was doing with any consistency.
Yeah, that's what a long time ago we were doing something, and Dante Scarnecchia was helping us out, and he said of all the weather factors, wind is the biggest.
Yeah, I would agree.
And that's been proven recently. I mean, Roethlisberger in that muck set a franchise record for completion percentage. I mean, we've seen Brady here in the snow. We've seen so many games with all the other elements, you can throw right through it.
Right. What else, guys? Today was the first day back, you know, getting ready for the Steelers. Players are off
no
today.
No practice.
Which is,
they'll get back tomorrow.
They're off or just not accessible?
Off.
They're off.
Really? Okay.
They have emails now, Fred. So I ought to try reading them.
So the talk about, you know, Belichick perhaps taking his foot off the throttle today.
Well, he poo-pooed that in the conference call we just listened to, saying it was just a Monday night short week schedule thing for to have the coaches get ready to present to the players. It was more a coaching issue. But he also on the radio alluded to that they're a tired football team.
Yes. Now, Fred, let me ask you a question.
And we know that they are from what the players talked about. We talked about it on the show last night.
I said that to Andy as soon as we got in the bus. I said, I think this is a tired, worn-out football team. And I mentioned something to you about it, and you just, of course, laughed it off, as you always do. But just,
he's taking a lot of shots at you today,
just,
Fred.
Just for argument's sake. Now, don't act like Son of Kraft over there. I'm just bringing it up for an argument's sake. They have an old defense, okay, a lot of old guys on defense. They had a lot of blowouts early in the year where people didn't need to be on the field. Do you think that could come back and haunt them as the year goes on with these guys taking too many snaps?
Well, I think that they could be worn out, but not because of that. You know, just they're old. But, I mean, you have to play 16 games, and, you know, I don't think that would be the difference. You know, sitting out a quarter –
think that would help?
Not really.
Okay.
Sitting out a quarter in October is going to help you in December?
Well, first of all, it was a lot more than a quarter. It could have been the last quarter of four or five different games.
Well, that's unrealistic.
They won game.
I know, but I don't.
It's unrealistic to have expected it going into the season, but it happened.
You only have 45 guys available.
No, but my point is, Fred.
Pierre Woods, Eric Alexander, they have guys.
The fact that those guys didn't get very many snaps on defense. Now, Eric Alexander was hurt for that stretch. But some of those other guys that didn't.
Pierre Woods is
Brandon,
active every week.
Brandon Merriweather didn't get hardly any snaps on defense at all. And all of a sudden, the other night, you're asking him to be basically your dime back the whole game. And I don't think he looked very good doing it.
Yeah, and Fred, I would argue in those blowouts, if you got Pierre Woods some experience, if somebody else went down, perhaps you'd have a guy now who can step in and contribute at linebacker.
Fred, we should take this call because the guy's been drinking all morning to prepare for his debut on this show.
Dermot in Detroit?
Dublin.
In Dublin.
Oh. Can you read?
Jeez. Are you drunk too?
Can you read?
Dermot, how are you?
Dermot.
Hey, Dermot.
Yes, we all know it's Dermot. He's an idiot.
He works for the Patriots.
How's the Guinness flowing?
Pretty good, actually. I just sobered up. So,
I don't buy that for a minute.
Yeah, screw you, Andy Hurst.
Hey! Save that one, Renee.
Easy. So I thought I'd give you a buzz because, you know, I can't really get my invection for Andy across sufficiently in email, so I thought I should ring to take the shots at him directly. I actually work as a specialist dealing with people with oversized heads, so I thought I could, you know, maybe help there. No, I'm joking. I thought I'd give you a buzz and say hello.
No help.
Because I guess you have a lot of American callers and American callers from outside of America ringing, but I guess you don't have too many foreigners, as you might say.
We don't.
So
what was that word?
There you go. So I should tell you that when I get to watch the games, it's on a Yahoo thing. So we kind of have, obviously, you're inconsiderate enough to have night games that we have to watch at 1:30 in the morning over here. So that's a bit annoying. But got to see it yesterday. I thought it was a tremendous game, but my heart wasn't too good after it. What did you guys...
Your liver either.
He's relentless, Dermot.
Yeah, listen, if I meet him, he's in trouble.
Yeah, I wouldn't mess with the Irish.
Either. I won't, I'm hiding.
He'll put a shank right in you.
Yeah, the boys from Southie, I believe, are the ones.
That's right.
Yeah. I've already had threats from them.
Oh, good job, they haven't delivered on it yet. But sure.
Unfortunately not.
This time. So.
Yeah, well, it was a roller coaster of a game.
Yeah, yeah. Mother of God, I wasn't feeling too good at the end of it now, but it was I guess, the debate about the MVP, that's done now. I can't see how you could quibble with it being anybody other than Tom Brady. I mean,
Randy drops Moss didn't impress you there.
Right? Ooh, taking shots.
What do you think? Are you as confident as ever that the Patriots will be 16-0? Were you ever confident? What do you think?
I'm a pessimistic person by nature, Fred, to be honest. But
that's why you drink so much.
Easy. Yeah,
that was Paul. That wasn't even Andy.
What is this, like an anti-Irish thing?
Well, I'm Italian, so I've hated you guys all my life.
Yeah, I was going to say, in fairness to me, I am Italian.
And I'm actually Irish.
So, all right. So, yeah, well, that beggars belief. But moving on. I thought that if they can get these two bad games, that's what they say about great teams, isn't it? If you can eke out a result and not be playing well, and yet you're still undefeated, I think that augurs well for the future. I really do. And
sure,
I agree. I was nervous, but now I'm on board with. Andy.
Hey, they go 15-0, and all of a sudden Dermot's on board.
That's right.
I will say the Philadelphia game, I never thought they were going to lose. I thought they could. I thought the game was in doubt right till the end, but I never thought they were going to lose. This game, I thought they were going to lose.
Especially when they got stuffed twice on fourth down.
Three times, depending on how you look at it.
I think the officials were drinking.
I guess the deals with the devil are still being done.
Oh, yeah. All right, Dermot.
So that's good stuff. Listen, I might ring you again in 10 or 11 months when the phone bill settles down.
Okay, we'll look forward to it.
Hey, yeah, thanks, Dermot. Guys.
Dermot,
have one on me later today.
All the way from Ireland.
Yeah, I only understood about three words he said. He might have swore at us a couple times.
I'm not sure. I didn't know what they were.
That's good, though. That's
excellent.
That's what you call
listener right, though.
Dedication.
We have people
calling in from Ireland.
We have Americans in other countries that call in, but that's the first foreigner I can remember calling in. That's big stuff. We are big. That's true.
Craig's not from another country. He's just from another
world.
Universe.
He won't call in anymore, Fred, you know.
He won't?
Craig won't call
in
anymore.
No, I think he got a job. That ought to last about one more week. He starts collecting unemployment again.
Well, Gary, can Craig call in and leave a message?
Sure.
Is there a voicemail on our number? If he does that, can you blow it up in the middle of the message?
Should we get a Weiner line together, get a voicemail on that?
Oh, we should, definitely.
Why don't we work on that? People could leave voice messages during the game, like emotional
Gary
ones.
Would have to work on it.
All we need to
Can you imagine what someone would have been like this week?
That would be great.
We'll just hook up a little answering machine, and overnight people can leave their messages.
We should.
Yeah, definitely.
And
it can be instant, like it can be during the game, so that their
Whatever
emotions are at the high.
Yeah, but that's not good for Patriots fans. They like drunk dial.
We'll put a timer on it, though.
They say things in the heat of the game that they don't really mean, then two or three days later they come back around.
And it'll be
the mailbox would be full by about the
No, we'll put, a, we'll put a limit.
You've added extra work
Each
for
message
Gary.
Can't be more than 20 seconds. So
He's like a national anthem with words?
Great anthem, by the way, down there, huh?
Yeah, who was
that? Oh, by the way, that guy was very, very
phenomenal. Good.
That's the way. You just bang it out.
Yeah.
Just bang it
Soon
out.
As I knew you done, liked that one.
As soon as it was done, Tom said, put that one on tape and give it to Fred. That's how the anthem's supposed to be done.
You just bang it out. None of the fans. Just, it's... Just bang it out.
The way I say it all the time, Fred, the song's not open to interpretation.
No, it is.
It's supposed to be sung a certain way.
That's right.
Sung? So that there's supposed to be someone singing?
Was the Boston Pops okay, Andy?
When?
Earlier this year.
I didn't really love it. That was great.
I liked someone to sing. Andy didn't care for it.
No, I didn't care for it. I didn't.
I thought they were
No, that great. that was fine.
I wasn't so high on this guitar thing. But
instruments are supposed to be background.
I didn't think the instrument was that bad because it kept the pace and didn't go all over the place.
Ooh.
Why? You just don't like guitar? Or?
No, I
like it being sung.
Anthem, someone should sing it.
Yeah. I'm with Andy on that one. The Boston Pops are phenomenal, but I'm just saying
that wasn't sung.
No, I'm saying they in general are phenomenal. I'm just for the national anthem. I like to hear someone sing it.
You want to hear the words? Okay. Well,
Dermot
that's fair.
In Detroit.
that's fair.
Where did you get Detroit?
I don't know.
He's an idiot.
Who?
Dave in stores.
What store are you in, Dave?
What's up, guys?
Dave, what store
hey, Dave.
Are you in?
Oh, good one.
Say something, Dave.
Doesn't get much lamer than that. So
I thought he might be
talking.
Christmas shopping or something. I don't know.
It was just one of those games. My heart was in my chest. I felt like throwing up at the end.
My heart's always in my chest.
you might as well have buried me after the game.
Where were you watching it?
I'm up in my dorm at school. I go to UConn.
Okay. One of the best sports information departments in the country.
Biology major?
No. Political science, actually.
I see what you were doing there.
Yeah. Yep. I just wanted to get your take on how you thought the Patriots used the backs in the game. I thought Maroney was okay, not great, because I remember you guys talked that you said that if Maroney had a good game against Baltimore, it wouldn't mean something. Against the Jets, it really wouldn't mean that much. But I think you see when he catches the ball in the open field like that, man, he just has another gear. I don't understand why he can't hit the hole like that.
Yeah, Dave, he's okay in the open. Like I've always said, once you get him in the open field where he can run with his aggressiveness, with a straight arm, and he runs well, it's just getting him in the open field. There was one run there that I pointed out to Andy. There was like a group full of people, and then there was a hole to the left. And I've seen guys like Barber stop and boom and hit the hole. Maroney kind of stops and waits to get tackled.
But he doesn't have a feel.
Right. He doesn't have good vision. That's my problem. I don't know if that can be coached, because if he can get through that first line of defense, he's okay.
Yeah. And I know you hate him, Tom.
No, I don't hate him. I actually like Lawrence Maroney.
No, I'm not talking about Maroney. I mean, I was going to say, I know you hate Dylan, but when Dylan was here, you see, remember in Indianapolis in the AFC Championship game, he might be slow. But
he does hit the hole very hard. Yes, that is correct.
Yep. And that he can see, like we were saying last year, if Maroney hit that hole, he'd be gone.
Right.
Well, can't find the hole.
Right. No, that's a good point.
You're exactly right.
We've all been critical of Dylan, but, I mean, let's face it, Dylan's accomplishments in the National Football League, I don't think Lawrence Maroney will ever even come close to any of those.
Unfortunately, probably not.
Dylan is one of the best, 25, 30 maybe running backs of all time. I mean, he had a very, very
able to hit the hole.
He had an exceptional career as an NFL running back, even though I've been critical of him at the end here when I thought that he was out of gas. I don't think that he tried very hard last year, to be honest with you.
But the issue with Maroney is he doesn't seem to have the feel. There was a couple runs where he lowered his head and just ran into his offensive
line. Right, that's
back,
what I mean.
When maybe he should be looking for the hole, and then there's other times when there's a hole there and he can't find, he's dancing. It's like, but he always gets it wrong.
I know, but those ones where he lowered his head, he got 4 yards, and I think
not
that's
the
what
one I was talking about.
Fred, we saw
a
different.
I think that's what they were asking to do.
I think they decided to
follow the run of the game was 6 yards, okay, Fred? 6 yards.
I know, that's what I see. He got 4 yards.
But it's always, as long as run of the game is always 6 yards.
He didn't run well as a running back. Now, he made two good plays out of nothing.
But maybe they decided he can't get to the open field on his own, so we got to get to him.
That's what I was going to say.
I actually thought they were both.
Other ways.
I don't think either play was designed to go to him. I think they were both great plays by Brady and great plays by Maroney.
I don't think he'll ever be the primary option.
That's
but
what I'm saying.
Getting him out there more as a check.
But to
down
me,
it would
mean more to me if it was a designed screen that he took 50 yards. You know, like on one of those Kevin Falk plays. That's what the play's supposed to be. You're setting up your blocks. You're reading, reacting, like the things that Tom is talking about. Those two plays, I thought, were Brady looking downfield, checking down, not having anything. Maroney doing a good job of getting himself available, especially on the second one. He slid back to the inside between the hashes, avoided all that wash on the outside, and then made a good run in the open field when he got a chance. I thought both plays, I thought he ran very well, but I don't necessarily look at those as, see, Maroney can do it.
I think they were both broken plays in the
open
field.
Not as a running back.
No, and he blocked well, too, in the passing game. So maybe now you can put him in on passing downs and get him the ball more. And the only thing I'll say is, have they ever run a sweep on this team? Ever? Like in the history of the Patriots, have they ever run a sweep?
Not many.
Yeah. Like
a lot of the fans have been calling for that since Maroney was drafted.
Because
like, why don't they run him more to the outside?
They ran that a lot at Minnesota. They ran him a lot on sweeps, and he would get to the outside and then kind of just cut and go. And I'm just wondering why they haven't tried that here. I don't know if he can run it in the pros. Maybe they've tried it in practice. Maybe it doesn't look good. I don't know. But in Minnesota, they ran that play a lot where they ran him on a sweep, and he ran very well.
Well, I think that Maroney certainly wasn't great, but I think he did earn some more reps in that game. I think if the coaches are looking for to give him some more opportunities, I think they might have found some in that game.
Okay.
Did you think he did that in Philadelphia too then?
Not as well.
Okay. No. Cuz I thought it was virtually the same thing. He had 3 or 4 more carries because he played the whole game instead of only a half.
Yeah, I thought he did much better in against Baltimore.
Okay. And otherwise the caller that said, like, I think maybe last week that they should put him back on kick returns, I agree with that. I think you take Hobbs off of kick returns, maybe you can play defense after that. I don't know.
No. I don't think that's the worst suggestion we've had, I'll tell you that.
As a running back, use him as a returner.
To get the ball in his hands in the open field the way he did on those two passes.
Dave from Storrs, thanks for calling in. UConn, like I said, great. They pump out the information at that sports information department.
How do you know this? Why are you talking about this?
Reams.
He must know somebody.
Yeah, what is this?
I don't know if you know. You used to have a magazine.
Do the Crafts own it?
Let me guess. You like UConn. I've always rooted for UConn.
Do the Crafts own UConn?
Probably.
Didn't you know I used to be a UConn fan?
That and the Adams Mark Hotel.
You were a UConn fan?
No, I'm talking to you. I like UConn.
No, I never
liked
UConn.
Really? I'm a UConn basketball fan because of Jim Calhoun. I always have been.
Yeah, I know, but I'm a PC fan, so I can't be a UConn
Obviously,
fan.
We've known that for a day and a half now.
It goes way back to...
You're undefeated? Yeah, I've always been a PC fan.
It goes way back to that storied overtime victory over Boston College on Saturday.
Ask Brian Morey.
I'd rather not.
I was born...
No, that would mean
right
I would have
campus.
To talk to Brian Morey, so I'm not doing that.
I can do without that.
Do without what?
Talking to Brian Morey.
Wow!
You being born. No, because we wouldn't have jobs.
Right. Because the guy I emailed my resume to would have just flushed it down the toilet.
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482. The emails are just streaming in. But I do want to get to one right off the bat who definitely has some issues with us.
Uh-oh.
There's a surprise.
He really is upset, and his name is Carl, and he's from Melbourne, Florida.
Okay.
And he says, I've had it with you saying on the air how you want to keep the show clean and are whipping the boys to keep them in line. This is addressed to me.
Oh, Fred,
he says,
I don't like that.
Every Friday you end the program by calling all of your listeners a part of the female anatomy. What do you mean? What do I mean? You always close Friday's show by saying, see you next Tuesday. You take the phonetic letters from the first two words and the first letter from the second two words. Well, they're letters. They're not. And you are insulting your audience. I know it's intentional because, A, it's radio. You won't ever see us.
S-Y-N-T.
And, B, if you were talking about your co-hosts, you'll see them at the game. Now, to Tom, a.k.a. Fred's butt kisser, now you're doing it, too.
Well called out.
And you have the nerve to be begging for food from us. I'm so outraged at you guys. I'm canceling.
We keep getting it.
I'm so outraged at you guys.
Lunch?
I'm canceling my free podcast subscription. On second thought, that's not going to do anything, come to think of it. I vastly prefer a clean show, and I really prefer the British style of insults and put downs. Think Monty Python when compared to some brainless string of four-letter words.
Sexual innuendo with Monty Python, I'll tell you that.
It's definitely best when the individual you're insulting isn't even aware it's happening. So I guess you can disregard this whole email except for the fact that I know what you've been doing. Love the show. Keep up the good work and go Pats.
So he thinks he's the only one who knows.
Evidently.
I think that was kind of tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, Carl, it definitely was.
Carl, the pool pond be good for you, Carl.
I happen to love Monty Python. I think they're
hysterical. I think Monty Python is funny.
I could watch it for 100 straight hours and never crack a smile.
Is that right?
Yeah, for some reason, whatever humor that is, it doesn't hit me.
Really?
I know people love it. That Holy Grail movie.
You know what they're going to say? You're not smart enough.
Well, maybe I'm not, because it's just not funny. I saw that Holy Grail movie. People talked about it for years. I felt like Andy. I watched it, and I was just like, this is it?
Yeah.
I think like me, because I never seen it.
I think it's okay. I think Monty Python's okay.
Some people, though, absolutely
some people
love
do think it's the... You know, the height of sophisticated comedy.
I think
I'd rather just say douche.
Yeah, I'd rather just laugh. Why does it have to be sophisticated?
Right.
I want to laugh.
Well, you could be sophisticated and laugh.
Not as hard.
No?
Nope.
Okay.
The F word's a funny word. A lot of those comics that say it, it's funny when they say it.
Like the subtle humor? I don't think it has to be subtle. If it's funny, it's funny.
Subtle is saying it wasn't all that funny. Laugh out loud is funny.
Oh, boy. All right. Webradio at Patriots.com.
Good stuff, Carl.
Yeah,
Carl,
and we will stop begging for food as soon as we stop getting it.
As soon as we stop getting it.
Let's see. Bill from Western Mass says, this is the worst they've seen the defensive backs play. They're several yards away from their coverage on more than half the play. What's going on? Has anyone been able to find Richard Seymour? Is he still playing for the Patriots? They have the best receivers and have in history on one team, but without balance, it can't work. We know that when a pitcher throws 98 miles an hour and has no other pitch, they sit on it and kill it. How does this differ?
Well, I'll say that I'm more disappointed in Seymour than I am of Maroney, because at least Maroney's, this is his second season. He's shown a little flashes here and there. I haven't seen Seymour step up in quite a while, and they gave him a lot of money. Now, Andy, you might be right. Maybe injuries are starting to take their toll on him and stuff, but it's when you don't have to double-team Seymour, that's a huge advantage to that offense, because now they can go and double team Will do whatever they want. And, you know, I think he needs to step up here in the next few games and get ready for the playoffs. Because if you can start running the ball on the Patriots, that kind of – talk about a blueprint. If you can run it like the Ravens did and keep the ball away from their offense, that's how you beat the Patriots.
Sure. I mean, you know, that's
– The less times that offense has a chance to score, the better your chances
are. You go back to the Giants and the Bills.
I agree with all the criticisms of the defense, because I don't think the defense has played very well really all year. I think the defense, the numbers look a lot better than what the performance has shown. But where I disagree is they're 12-0.
Right.
Why can they not win four more games doing that? I don't understand. I think this offense is historic. And these are the quote-unquote bad games that they've been held to 24 and 27 points the last 2 weeks offensively.
Right.
Plus, you take away some of the drops and plays that could have been made.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, you could make an argument saying, well, you're going to get a couple of drops as the weather gets bad, and the conditions probably had something. And I agree with that. But they still scored 27 points. That's enough to win games. I don't see any reason why they can't go 19-0 playing offense the way they do, even with a leaky defense. You know, I've never been a big proponent of the whole defense wins championships mantra. I think there are as many examples of teams winning with a dominant offense as there are with a dominant
Carolina
defense.
Game. I mean, each team couldn't stop anything. It was whoever had the ball last.
Yeah, I would be more worried about the defense going forward.
I am worried about this season.
Yeah. Next year, if you lose a couple of those guys we think they might lose, like Seau and Bruschi, and if Seymour never regains what he once was, and, you know, all of a sudden you're trying to replace four or five guys, and that's tough to do for any team.
Yeah, and I am concerned. I don't want to blow it off and say that, you know, you guys are worrying about all this stuff and it's not going to come back and haunt them. Maybe it will, but I don't see any reason why this offense isn't good enough to win despite, you know, an average defense.
Yeah,
because I don't think it's a bad defense.
It won't hurt them this season, I don't think.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I agree with that.
Let's see.
Who are you looking at?
Will said, I had to write to you guys about the game. First, let me say that the Ravens played a great game, especially on the defensive side. I am officially worried about the Pats D after the third quarter, too. But I had to write about the pass interferences and illegal contacts the Ravens got away with. Even when Ed Reed intercepted that pass, the receiver was tackled before the ball arrived. What the? It was constant muggings all game. The road to the Super Bowl got a lot tougher if this is the way games are going
to
be called. P.S.
Kinda
there
like
was even an offensive pass interference in the Hail Mary.
Patriots fans should revisit their thoughts on contact against receivers and turn it back a few years to when that's all they did was absolutely mug and maul the receivers for the Indianapolis Colts.
There were a lot of.
I know.
So it was okay then, but it's not okay anymore.
Fred's right.
They also called a lot of them.
Whether or not it wasn't okay then or not, there was a lot of contact.
And they called a lot of them.
And there was. All I'm saying is.
They called three of them.
13 penalties.
Patriots fans are pulling a Kirsch and changing their view based on how the Patriots are affected by the specific issue.
But they were right off the top of my head.
All those other teams whined.
But right off the top of my head, I can think of three calls.
But we win when we whine.
And Paul, you don't lose.
We don't whine in losing. We whine in winning.
So you won't whine if they lose because
right.
of it.
The one thing that's a constant is the whining. What,
Paul? Paul answered this and asked PFW, and he's exactly right. You're never, ever, ever, ever going to get that call on a Hail Mary. It's never happened in the history of sports.
Yeah, right.
Like Paul wrote, the closest one was the Terry Glenn that happened against the Bills, but that was one-on-one.
Were you here for that? You worked. You did the PFW.
Sure.
The PFW then, right?
I was here when Terry was
That was drafted. One-on-one.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're never going to get a bunch, like 10 guys jumping for a ball. You'll never in the history of life get that call
ever. Which one do you call? Everyone's
in the example that I'll use is what we saw the very day before when we were waiting to eat on Sunday night in the Cleveland-Arizona game. Kellen Winslow got buried before the ball got there. They're not going to call pass interference on a last play Hail Mary like that.
And it
They're
was pass interference. Samuel did get killed, but I'm just telling you, they're never, ever going to call that.
On the phone is Steve from Edgerton. Steve.
What did you just say, Fred?
Edgerton.
Steve. How's it going, boys?
Good. How you doing?
Not bad. Not bad. I'd like to ask, I mean, what is the deal with this pass or this rush defense? Does Will Fork only take up two guys now, or what?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. It's they were getting there, but getting there late. I mean, they were definitely knocking Bowler around, but they weren't doing it, you know, in time. And so it's a concern.
Yeah. You know what? I think we need that 265-pound middle linebacker Ted Johnson type.
It would help.
Yeah.
Somebody like that, somebody that, you know, the traditional runs. If you're going to play a 4-3, that's definitely the kind of guy you want in the middle there.
Yeah. I thought Ray Maluga would be a good guy to put in there, but he says he's not coming to the draft this year.
Yeah, we'll see about that. That's, Ray's not the smartest man in the world, so I'm not going to believe anything he says right now, but he is the perfect run-stuffing linebacker. I'm sure they like Laurinaitis as well. He can do more things, but if you're looking for the guy to plug up the middle, it's Maluga, but as Andy will tell you, Bill Belichick said at a press conference, he likes his linebackers now to be able to cover as well, and Maluga certainly is a decent and cover guy, but he makes his money stopping the run.
And he's mean.
He's mean. Mean as hell.
Yeah.
We like him.
What do you think the chances are, should Maluga come to the draft, that we get both guys?
Laurinaitis and Maluga?
None. Well, unless they get a situation where they pick up an extra draft pick, you know, and they end up picking twice in the top 15 or so.
Yeah,
20.
But you're not going to get that.
You think Maluga's a top 15 pick?
And even then, I don't think they would take two linebackers with first round picks. I think they're first round picks, don't you? Laurinaitis.
I would say Maluga, in my opinion, is a late first, early second guy.
Oh, no way.
Just because of the depth.
I think more of them than that.
No, well, the depth will be going down if he comes out because he's going to be two or three in that depth.
The only way I'd agree with Steve is if he runs a bad 40. He needs a guy that all of a sudden, if he runs a 40, that's a little slower than expected.
Right.
We've seen those guys drop.
Especially with that kind of
description. Then he'll be a very good late first round or early second round pick that'll have a 10-year career.
He might have interviews with teams because, from all accounts, he's not smart.
Right.
I mean, there's no other way to put it. That's what people say about him. So maybe he'll turn teams off. So maybe then, yes, you would be correct, Steve.
He could be football smart, too. That's all anybody cares about. But I agree that, you know, we'll wait. You know, there's a long time to go before the draft boards start getting set. And when Andy and Tom get out to the combine, they'll get a better feel from talking to some guys. But I haven't seen too many linebackers that do what he does on a consistent basis. I'm not going to pretend that I watch every game that intently, but he's a pretty active player, on a pretty good team. Plays at a high level.
He makes that defense pretty good. Do you think it's going to hurt him, though, he's not playing in the national championship game?
No. That's not going to hurt him at all.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. That's
Steve
who was that?
Steve in Edmonton.
Edmonton. I did that on purpose.
Thanks. I thought you really did the Detroit one on purpose, too.
Freaking idiot.
No, that one was just him being a freaking idiot.
Jeff and Bartlett says, I'm sure I'm the 89th person to comment on the disturbing trends of no pass rush, no run defense, no pass coverage, no drop passes, and no commitment to the running game lately. This week I was more shocked to see the special teams get into the bad act, giving up two big returns. I know Pats fans shouldn't cry because we're still unbeaten, but usually the team is getting better in December. I have to comment on the 07 draft at this point, as you have previously. Watching Merriweather drop that potential game-ending pick made me ill. I find it shocking that after the entire 07 draft has been a bust. If it weren't for Harrison limping off at the end of the game, the Pats would probably release Merriweather today and not notice his absence.
How could such a bad draft happen to such a smart team? Even worse, how could they let the defense slip back to the old and slow like an 0-2? I thought missing the playoffs that year taught them a lesson. Wow.
Wow.
Jeff and Bartlett is just
not happy.
One thing I'll say is there was reports that, and they were diffused by higher-up people, that they were interested in Darrell Revis in the draft. Watching the way Revis plays with the Jets, I think that might have been accurate because I think he would be a nice fit here. He plays well man-to-man. So, I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but I just have a feeling, and I'm sure they liked Merriweather because they drafted him, but I don't think they were all that excited about a lot of guys in the first round. I think they might have liked one or two players, and I think they were taken off the board. And
I think
that's
true.
They kind of just took the best player that they had left on their board.
Hey,
I'm not as disturbed with the pick as I was with him coming up to make a tackle and just flailing and missing terribly.
Darling,
I mean, if you're
going to,
especially when they had him lined up deep all day, and if he's my last line of defense, I'm not feeling so good about it.
The dropped interception, that can happen to any guy at any time. That happens, you know. I mean, were you physically ill when Randy Moss dropped the touchdown? I mean, drops happen.
I said he was going to have four touchdowns on the day.
But I have a question to ask you guys, and I don't know if I'm wrong on this. My opinion is off, but. We're getting a lot of emails about the lack of pass rush specifically, and I'm wondering, I don't really think it's been that different. I think the difference has been the coverage has been not as good as it was earlier, and I think it wasn't that great earlier. But I think that especially in this game against Baltimore, I thought Bowler was immediately under the gun on several throws but was able to get the pass off and find a guy open. I think that they're getting there, and they're chasing him out of the pocket at times, but... The coverage just isn't there. No, I'm not. Look, they didn't sack him once, so I'm not ready to hand out gold stars to the pass rush.
And I also don't feel like they've been overly aggressive with the pass rush.
They haven't blitzed a ton.
No.
But I think that's because they're struggling to cover.
That could be. But I've never felt like, oh, they're going after him. They're trying to make plays. It's been kind of a reserved pass rush. We'll just go with our 3 and 4 up front, see if they can get there. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
The example would be the 4th and 7 early in the game. That would be a time normally that you see the Patriots come with everybody, and it's basically an avalanche, similar to in San Diego in the playoff game last year. The Chargers passed up that long field goal, I think, on the first or second drive, and it was a 4th down, and Rivers just got smothered by Vrabel. I think he even caused a fumble on the play. But the Patriots came swarming through, no chance at all for Rivers to get the ball off. This one, Bowler had a regular 5-7-step drop, stepped on the back foot, throw is out, guys wide open on the sideline, no extra pressure, no nothing.
It seems like you turn back the clock to the Romeo days. There were more of those.
Dial it up.
And they'd get burned, everyone. There was the Randall Gay play where he was the one left alone and got burnt deep because they called it tsunami blitz or something ridiculous. They sent everybody.
In the Super Bowl? Which one are you talking about?
No, it was here. It was going left to right in our press box view. I don't remember. I'm not good at these like you.
left to right in my
James
press box
James Sanders
view.
Has gone a little bit this year.
Back in those days,
I felt like they used to send the house every once in a while. You know, Rodney in the preseason, something like that, with him coming off the edge and running through Vince Young. I just haven't seen that aggressive pass rush.
And what Paul said, and this is something I would love to ask Bill if he would answer the question, which he won't. It seems to me if your coverage isn't great, sending pressure would be better, not worse, because you get to the quarterback so much quicker you don't have to cover as long. But coach in the world, when they don't have great coverage, doesn't blitz, so there has to be a reason.
I think what Bill's figuring...
I would wonder what he would say about that.
I don't know. I agree with you. It would be interesting to hear his take. I think what he might be thinking, though, is... I'm probably have better talent than the team I'm playing pretty much every week.
Don't give up the easy play.
Yeah. You know, if I do blitz and I don't get there, my tackling has been an issue all year. So now I'm asking one guy one-on-one to not only cover, which they've struggled to do, but tackle the guy once the guy catches the ball and there's no one else there. You know, for example, that play that the Ravens made on the scramble where Merriweather misses that tackle, turns into a long – well, that's a touchdown if you blitzed on that play in addition to missing – the one tackle. So
put Jimmy Sanders back there and I'll feel okay.
Jimmy Sanders is as good an open field tackler as the Patriots have had in the last 5 years.
Unless Joseph Addai makes his first open field move in the history of his career.
Jimmy didn't see
no,
that.
I'm just saying.
He was on an island. No
it's
chance.
Funny that he always makes the tackle and then we always say, well, Addai can't make open field moves. And when those two met, it was Addai actually making the right
move.
Maybe
that's he was thinking. This guy can't make open field moves.
He probably was. So I'm going to the spot.
By the way, are we calling James Sanders Jimmy now?
I do.
He always calls me Jimmy Sanders.
Makes it easier for your little cuts and headlines and all that stuff. Okay. James isn't as fun.
All right. Let's see. Kyle is from Washington, D.C.
He says, what did you think of Maroney's game? I was glad to see the big play abilities on his catches, but I wasn't overly impressed with his running.
Fred was.
Was the Ravens' D that good? It's good to see him do something with his chances, but I'm dreading the inevitable fan emails blasting you guys for calling him disappointing. One game
does
not
nothing.
Justify a first-round pick. Do it the rest of the season, and we can talk. Okay, fine.
Well, here's my biggest problem with people who argue. If
Paul's Buffalo thing is burning my eyes. There's so much sauce on it.
All right, can we talk now? Or
why I can't talk about Paul's food?
Well, not when someone's in the middle of a sentence.
All right,
Fred,
go ahead.
Miss Manners over here checking in.
If you disagree with my point on Maroney, that's fine. Just don't say that.
Is that her name?
Well, he played. I'm done.
What's the matter?
I'm not talking. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Tom. I'm sorry. No. Go
playing the role of Paul Perillo in today's episode of PFW Progress.
Go.
Next
go
email.
Ahead. Andy won't interrupt.
You
me,
have a
probably.
Vacuum or something you want to talk about? What do you get, Nikki, for
I
Christmas?
I promise Andy won't interrupt you. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, don't use the argument, well, the Ravens have a good defense. Because that tells me, okay, well, he's not going to play well against the Steelers then because
right.
they have a good defense.
Right.
So if you drafted Lawrence Maroney to put up good numbers against the Jets, irrelevant for me. I think you earn your money and money time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you play a good defense, usually the defense has some hits, and then you have some hits too.
Right.
So I don't like that argument that every time he doesn't have a good game, well, they had a good rush defense. Well, a lot of people have a good rush defense. Get some yards.
Kyle also says Brandon Merriweather is officially a waste of space. Not only can
wow,
he cover,
he's taking it on the chin.
He drops a sure interception toward the end of the game. Is there any hope for this kid? And also, what is wrong with
Hey,
Randy?
Paul, that looks good.
What is wrong with Randy Moss? He's dropping
Buffalo
balls.
Saucy. I can't even think.
What's that, roast beef?
He's dropping balls that should be caught, and I'm not seeing him do much of anything. Is a physical defense really able to throw him off his game to this extent? Well, he was wide open on that touchdown pass that he dropped.
Just dropped
so.
It.
He mentioned the wind a little bit, adjusting the ball, right, Paul? You were telling me that.
Not to make an excuse, but
he made
excuse.
No, but the way he talked, I mean, if you were there and heard him talk, you wouldn't think it was necessarily as much making an excuse as maybe I made it sound, but... He just talked about the differences. When in the wind, the ball moves around a lot. And
sounds
it's
like
not,
an excuse.
And it's not just it's
your hands can move too, you know, when the ball moves.
Well, that's what he said is it kind of changes the eye level of the ball and it makes it a little bit more difficult. And he said flat out, I dropped the ball. I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying that's some of the differences in conditions like they had Monday night. I think that may have bothered him. He even put his hands up, you know, in an open way. To say how he would have caught the ball, and then but he turned him at the last minute because he was struggling, trying to track the flight of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like with a baseball glove, you don't know whether you're going
right,
up or down.
Right.
Yeah, I don't mean to make it sound like it's a big
one,
excuse.
Though,
he dropped a couple.
He should have caught the other one that
which,
he ended
by the
up
way,
out
made,
of bounds.
Made me also think that our calculations were way off. By the way, this week in our drops.
Why Eric had like one,
four. And I came up
nine.
With four off the top of my head. Yeah, I don't necessarily think there were nine either. I think that's the Brady slant. Somewhere in the middle, probably. Football outsiders
one,
are one of those.
The
nine.
One he went out of bounds, he should have caught the first time. He, like, triple caught it, and that's why he was out of bounds by the time he actually caught it. It wasn't even close.
But there was, one for Watson right away. Falk dropped a little dump off. Moss had the blatant drop. And Stallworth, I think, had one.
Yeah, but that was a tough hit.
Although I would list that as a defense.
Yeah. So, somebody said that
because I think
he
had the ball and then he turned and then got lit up.
Yeah. I give that to the defense.
Yeah.
Kyle.
Wow. Fans have they're questioning Moss now. Merriweather just is already a bust.
It's unbelievable.
Guys played two games all year basically and he's a bust.
Kyle finally says I have a tough time crediting the Patriots with this win. As far as I'm concerned, the Ravens gave the game away by not going for it on 4th-and-1 before the final Patriots drive. We all know about the penalties. Speaking of which, how was their locker room after the game? Did anyone get stabbed? I think he's talking about the Ravens locker room.
Oh, the Ravens?
Tom.
Yeah, yeah. They were pretty boisterous on what was going on. Bart Scott obviously wasn't happy. Ray Lewis didn't talk. Ray Lewis said right away he wasn't talking. So then I was waiting for Bart Scott while everybody was at some offensive lineman's locker, because obviously Scott was the big part of my story. And there was a mutual friend there of Scott and Ed Reed's who was sitting next to him. And Scott was just going off on and on about the referees calling him boy. See, I thought at the time he called Bart Scott boy. I didn't, because he didn't say it to the media when I was
right.
there. But he was talking about Samari Roll. There was people yelling in the showers. I could hear about the play calling. There was a lot. And I think part of it, though, like I know people are getting on the Ravens. I think after such an emotional loss like that, and you didn't have time to look back at some of the film, and you just keep getting flag sure. after flag. You know, I think they're just saying, Mike, because McAllister, they asked, you know, how'd you feel during that drive? And he's just like it was never going to end. Yeah. He's like, I just felt we stopped him.
Right.
It didn't end. We stopped him. It didn't end. And I think that's a lot what you got. Because
yeah.
you have to remember, this was it for the Ravens.
Right.
This
yeah.
is it.
This is their Super Bowl.
This is
right.
it. I even heard Bart Scott say something, and I'm not going to empty my bank account on the Colts here, but he said something along the lines of, how are we supposed to get up for the game next week or something like that. And I was thinking, don't they play the Colts? That's money in the bank.
On the phone, right?
In another yeah. primetime home game.
Yeah,
by the way.
Tom's getting
That's
the
funny.
Early line on that
so
one.
So they were quite demoralized. They were mad. They were angry. And it's just too bad Ray Lewis didn't talk. I mean, Billick talked for about 10 seconds and left.
Yeah.
But that's interesting, too. You know, the emotion comes off the game. We all looked at the plays afterwards, and we all thought virtually every call we agreed with. I mean, it was definitely a penalty on Watson in the end zone, no question. But when you're the team that comes up with that stop, you don't look at it rationally
no,
like that.
Sure.
All you're looking at is we've stopped them on 3 fourth downs, and all 3 times the referees did something to give the other team another chance. Whatever, you know, doesn't matter if they were all right.
Right.
Although there is some question as to whether or not an assistant coach is allowed to call
That's
a timeout
the
from the sideline.
Supposedly
they're not.
No, they're not, but... The rule, and Aiello was asked about this. He says when...
Let me guess, they got it right.
Well, when their back is to the sideline, they're not supposed to turn around and see who's calling it. The rule is... You
that makes a lot of sense.
In a last-second
timeout... So in other words, Matt Estrella could have been doing it?
Yeah.
I mean...
On a last-second call for timeout, you granted them because you assume that the coach has the control of his sideline.
I don't think that's right.
That's what Aiello said.
If they're taught that, then that's a big-time flaw.
Okay, so can you imagine the one time that the ref has his back to the line, hears timeout, and doesn't grant it?
The head coach can be in his back pocket if he wants.
I know, right. But can you imagine the one time that the ref won't grant that timeout?
Well, imagine it other way. You just cost the team a game by granting it
I know,
incorrectly.
But you're supposed to have control of your sideline.
Right, but it could be anybody yelling timeout,
That's
Fred.
The point, Paul.
Just because it was an assistant coach doesn't mean
Paul,
it...
Paul, that is exactly the point. How, as a ref, are you supposed to know who's
52
doing
minutes.
It?
So wait a minute. Wait a minute. Brian Billick is supposed to be in charge of every person on that sideline?
Paul, as a ref, how are you supposed to know who's calling that
You turn
timeout?
Around and look. You Pretty simple. I just said.
You can't do that.
Why not?
Because the ball's about to be snapped. You have to watch the play.
Then you shouldn't let it go that close if you want a timeout.
Well, then you want to change the rules. Fine.
That's what I'm saying.
Fine, but the
I
way.
Think,
the
your way explanation that Aiello gave, first of all, again, I'll stress, I think every call was correct. Every one.
So but, is Mike Pereira.
Well, yeah. I mean,
when Chris Webber
he's working on a 12-year stretch of that.
When Chris Webber called that timeout, they didn't have any timeouts, but they stopped the action and gave them a penalty. I mean, a foul.
That's the rule.
I know, but you can't not stop the action when you hear somebody call timeout.
What did they do to the Detroit Lions when they didn't have timeout here in Gillette Stadium
last
year?
They gave them a penalty.
No, they didn't. They didn't blow the whistle. Because if you don't have a timeout, that's the rule.
But that wasn't called from the sideline.
If you don't have a time, they didn't blow the whistle, Fred, because they didn't have time. It didn't matter who called it.
But that wasn't called from the sideline.
But I'm just telling you, there are ways to do this.
But
I don't agree with the implementation of the rule.
It's not even the same. It's apples and oranges. They did have a timeout. The
apples and oranges, exactly. Your Chris Webber analogy was apples and oranges. And I'm just trying to point out to you the fact that it didn't make any sense.
Okay, the point is that when you're a ref, you don't. They are told. If you hear screaming timeout at the last second, you grant it.
Well, I think that's something that Bill will probably put in his back pocket and use in the
Absolutely.
Future.
Absolutely.
I think that's a flaw, and I think it's the NFL covering up for themselves again.
Yeah, but, if I'm the guy in the front row,
but,
I put all, in my
but,
front pocket.
But if you look at
I can yell from the crowd.
Know,
the guy
a video
call.
Guy
you're
yelling timeout,
yeah.
timeout.
Yeah, especially here where no one
I
else
can't
cheers.
Look. Well,
I can't
timeout.
Look.
What there should be is a 15-yard unsportsmanlike penalty for that.
On who?
On the bench, on that team, if somebody who's not supposed to be calling a timeout is screaming timeout behind a ref, they should have a 15-yard penalty.
No, that would have been a better solution than don't turn around and see who's
okay,
doing
okay, that's fine, but I'm just saying that as a ref, you can't have eyes behind your back.
As a person, I'm saying that there's no rule that should ever say a guy should call something based on something he doesn't see, he only hears. That's all I'm saying. If that's really right what Greg Aiello said, which I don't
that's
necessarily believe,
well,
I think he's covering.
Okay.
I think he's covering the NFL's tracks as usual. But if that's right and that's the way they're taught, I think there's a massive flaw in that rule.
I know, but can you imagine?
Imagine it sounded like holding.
I know, but can you imagine?
So I'm going to throw the flag.
Okay,
that makes a lot of sense.
That does too. But can you imagine if the Ravens had not stopped that first down and they hadn't granted a timeout, they'd be screaming on the other side.
Well, no, because the rule is the head coach has to call it. You go right to the rule book.
Billick's the one that said he called it after the game.
No, I know, but the video evidence shows Rex Ryan calling it.
I know, but they could have both been doing it. I don't know.
I'm not even arguing.
Then the NFL should just say, I know there's video evidence of Rex Ryan calling it, but Brian Billick was yelling it too. That would have been their out. A lot easier than anything
else. Either way.
Bottom line is, has this rule of coaches calling timeouts from the sideline caused more problems than it's worth?
Yes.
With yes.
The field get goals rid of it.
And this
that way, that's the decision and, right there. And, get rid of
and
it.
And Andy, that is the best point I've heard because there was a reason at one time when the it couldn't be called from the sideline because the ref has his back
so to
the sideline.
So go back to that.
You know what that
is? And that's the best point I've
heard. That's like big government. We need to give the coaches more control. They already control the game too freaking much as it is anyway. Jesus, the players can call timeout. I hate that rule. I
agree.
It.
I also hate, if we're going to go around this topic, Tom talking about players and coaches and the whole, remember when I asked Bill about captains and what they do, and it's now become officials just basically deal directly with, and it's almost like you can change the decision. We saw it this week. In the sideline, once they realize what's going on, can change it. Used to be in the old days, a captain had to look to his sideline. The coach would sort of signal it to him, but the captain was the guy who voiced whether they accepted the penalty, declined it. I like that. And you screw up, you screwed up. And it's part of the game.
And you know,
the ref didn't even ask on that one.
No,
I think that was really what got him in trouble.
I know,
but I totally agree with you. Why
like
do you have
captains? Right.
Captains
are the representatives on the field.
People ask why the league, asked teams to have that C on their jersey. They should make it mandatory, and they should start,
Have you checked this opinion with upstairs?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't necessarily voice that out loud.
No, but it should be, like you said, the captain should be in charge of on the field, and they should be the only ones that talk directly with the refs.
I understand what you're saying about the whole timeout thing, and I'll just say this last thing, and I'll let that say my piece. If for whatever way Brady ended up running for a touchdown on that play, and they got a do-over. They had to do it over again and got stopped on the next one because they called a timeout by a guy who wasn't authorized. I just can't even imagine what the reaction would be like around New England. That's all I'm saying.
The first reaction would be a red flag coming out of Belichick's pocket because no matter what happens, he's throwing a red flag there to stop the
whatever
game.
You want to say, but the refs did not screw up on that play.
In my opinion, they did.
Okay.
Just for the record, I set the over-under for 28.5 minutes when you two would get into it, and you went far over, 52 minutes.
52 minutes. That's almost doubled it.
Yes, I'm happy. Yeah. Very happy.
What are you guys so happy for? Holiday season or something? Is that what cut down on the...
Because I can admit that I thought every call was correct. I thought they interfered with Ben Watson in the end zone. I thought that's a flag. That has to be a flag.
Well, if it wasn't that, they had Gaffney's shirt, and then they sandwiched Watson when the ball was in the air. So somebody was going to throw a flag on that. Let's see. Jim,
I just would look at it the other way. The Ravens were clearly very upset. If Tom Brady had made, if he had done a quarterback sneak three times and gotten it and something brought it back, how he would have reacted.
Sure. I mean,
and we read that story recently about him crying like a little baby.
You'd be yelling conspiracy.
I've seen that play on fourth down.
You'd be saying so-and-so didn't move. It wasn't a false start. They just threw that.
Right. I've seen countless plays with the game on the line on fourth down. This is the only thing I disagree with Fred on. I've seen many plays, that amount of contact and worse, not get called. And the theory is, they don't come out and say it, but the theory is the game's on the line. It's the ultimate play, fourth down. I'm going to make the players decide it on the field. I've seen it many times go uncalled. I've seen it uncalled here against the Colts in the 0-3 championship game on the fourth down play. Same kind of deal. Roman Pfeiffer mugged Marcus Pollard. Well, they didn't call it. I had no problem with them not calling it then.
Well, Peter King, who is the ultimate authority, agrees with Patriots fans, so that's all I need.
Well, I'll just add, Fred, that this week, according to the Ravens players, and obviously I don't know anything about this, but they said they didn't grant him the timeout until Brady was stopped, and they never threw the false start penalty until they didn't throw the flag until Heath Evans was stopped.
If there's visual evidence of that, then...
But that's what they were arguing in the locker room.
Yeah. Do you think that's true?
No, because I'm not like that one Ask PFW emailer who thinks the games are fixed by the league.
Right, right.
I don't think games are fixed. I think refs make bad calls at certain times in the game.
Jim in Florida says, I grew up in New England. I'm 40-plus year Pats fan, now living in Florida. I appreciate your radio show, your insightful opinions, and interviews with Pats players. What a game. I wasn't pretty, but it was sure exciting. I'll gladly take the win. All the belly aching by Raven and Patriots haters is such a joke. Anyway, I have two questions I'd like your opinion on.
Wait, Fred, can I just say one thing?
Yes.
Now, after Denver beat the Patriots, right, Patriots fans and the Patriots, because I'm sure the owner never said anything, is that correct? because he did. He did.
About what?
About the officiating the year after he said something when they were playing the Broncos again. So the Patriots never said a word. The Patriots fans never said a word about officiating.
No, they, of course they did.
Okay.
That was a terrible call on Asante Samuel.
It was.
Yeah.
And so that's my point.
Terrible but calls happen.
We can't all be right down the middle, Tom.
About it.
No, but everybody whines.
We can't.
Everybody whines. That's the point.
We can't all be, you know, silently passive and impartial about every game. We take sides.
Right. Just don't make fun of Ravens fans.
We take sides, and we say what
we think. And we all took that side, and we all thought that Samuel got a ridiculous penalty called against him. But we don't make fun of the Ravens for thinking the same thing.
And even after we saw the video, we still said it because it was true.
Right. So why are the Ravens fans getting criticized because they think their team was wrong? They're doing the same thing the Patriots. Did Denver make fun of us?
I mentioned once about the
Ravens. I'm not talking to you, Fred.
You're
talking to the fans.
He said Ravens and Patriots haters. He said, but he put them both in the same.
No, he's saying the Ravens and Patriots haters.
Okay, well, all right. I mean, that's what fans are. I mean, why do you have to get on fans for doing that? Are they supposed to just watch the game and not take a side?
That's what Paul wants.
I mean, that's what being.
I think you should be realistic. I think fans should.
Yeah, but that's what fans are. That's what's fun about this.
Those aren't good fans.
Why do you have to take a side by making fun of the other team's fans?
Because that's what it's all about. It's just being a fan.
Andy, do you think I'm Joe Football? I'm Joe Football, right?
I think you're Joe Football.
Okay.
Joe Psycho Football.
All right. NFC Championship game, when the Cowboys lost to the Niners, they're down by 10 points. Michael Irvin gets interfered with by Deion Sanders. Should have been first and goal. Instead, they called offensive interference. Switzer comes out, gets another 15-yard penalty, totally ended the game. You know what I said?
Right.
Shouldn't have started the game off 21-0 then. If you wanted to win that game, you should have been more prepared. And I didn't complain, cry, say we got robbed.
Right.
Sometimes you got to be realistic,
You're
Fred.
Amazing.
Yeah, I am. Thank you. You said it. I didn't.
Let's see. Jim, this is his question. He says, why didn't Belichick onside kick from the Ravens 35? If the Pats recover, the game's over. If they don't recover, the ball is still down around the 20, and precious seconds have been bled off the clock. Giving the Ravens the ball on the 20 with 44 seconds to go puts them in position for a completion of two and or maybe a pass interference and a game-tying field goal try, or the Hail Mary that came oh so close to beating the Pats in the final play. A lot of people talked about it. Why didn't they squib it or whatever?
What if they onside kicked it and they did one of those where the guy picked it up and ran it for a touchdown?
Possibly. You know.
I think there's more danger.
I wouldn't have onside kicked it, but I would not have kicked a touchback.
What about,
and I said
pooching it.
Yes,
yeah.
That's exactly what I suggested at the game, and I apologize.
I thought
you made fun of me for that, but I apologize.
Well, I made fun of you for a lot of things that day, so it could have got lost in the shuffle.
That's true.
But Andy, let me ask you.
I just thought kick it as high as you can, and they're going to have to fair catch it. Now they're probably going to be inside their 10.
Right.
If you squib it and you execute it, it's even better because now the clock's going to run.
Right.
And they're going to be inside their 10.
Let me ask you, Andy.
I didn't understand.
With the way that the Ravens' offense was moving in that fourth quarter, wasn't their best chance to pick up an onside kick and return it for a touchdown?
Yeah,
a freakish thing like that.
I think you could
kick it on the ground.
Whatever you decide to do, whether it's kick it over the first line and just sort of let it bounce around, whether it's have like two safeties back on like a quasi onside coverage, I just thought kicking it through the upright seemed like the weirdest of the decisions there. I don't know. I thought there was another.
I think
way
that gave you the least amount of advantage that you could get from kicking off at the 35 yard line.
You ended up.
You
with
took
a
no time off
net kick.
So
you took no time off the clock. You gave no chance to make a play. Nothing.
Now,
all you did was play
a
safe
question. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just throwing.
Plus, if it bounces around, you take some time off the clock.
But what if they put Ed Reed back there? Now they can do the lateral thing where they give it to Ed Reed again. Isn't that a better chance of scoring that way than? You know what I mean?
It's not. I mean, that
I'm
would
just
take
throwing
a miraculous
it out there.
Play.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean.
But maybe that's what Bill's thinking, is that the only way this team can beat us now is by something stupid happening.
I just think that when you're talking about a 35-yard field, like Paul said, if you kick it high, your coverage is going to be right there.
That would be the most logical.
I think there was a better chance of them getting 50 yards of field position and kicking a game-tying field goal from the 20 on a touchback than there was of a lateral play or a squib kick that went right to somebody or
so, I don't know.
Any of that.
It was an interesting one. Wes from Richmond, Virginia. Is it just me, or has our defense been giving opposing QBs an identity crisis? Longtime backup A.J. Feely and the disappointing Kyle Bowler have looked like veterans, Pro Bowl-caliber players the past 2 weeks. Aside from their later interceptions in their respective games, they both played fantastic, both stood in the pocket and took hits regularly while delivering the ball to the open receiver on target. Is this an indication teams are giving us their Super Bowl every week from here on out,
or is our defense simply not that good in showing its age?
See, I would disagree with that because I thought Bowler didn't play well at all. I thought Feely did. I thought Willis McGahee was the reason why. I mean, Bowler completed a couple of passes, but one of his – he had, what, 200 and some yards? One of them was a 52-yard – I don't think Bowler did what Feely did.
Right.
I thought there were guys open, but I wouldn't say Bowler played phenomenal.
Well, no, they did it with McGahee. Right. That was the
– But I didn't think Bowler was terrible. I thought
he
just
wasn't
sort of
terrible.
Did what,
no, I thought Bowler was very good.
One throw, he basically did what they wanted him to do.
See, I thought Feely went out there and
he
almost won
did
the
it.
Game.
Yeah,
won
it.
The
Feely,
game
Feely
the
did it. Feely was the reason Philadelphia
that's
did it.
That's the difference.
And
in
Bowler
week.
Wasn't.
The 1 week it was the pass defense getting shown up. The next week it was the run defense.
Right. Bowler
shown
played.
Up.
I thought Bowler played very well, doing what he was asked to do. But I totally
especially
agree.
For him.
I totally agree with Tom. Feely put Philadelphia in a position where they could steal the game, whereas Bowler was just kind of along for the ride with McGahee doing that.
Brian Lowe said something about the Ravens' defense that caught his attention. He said for the first time a team's been successful not only taking Moss out of the game but also Welker. They took both guys out of the game, which is pretty amazing. And you got to go back to what Belichick said before the, you know, during the week with Ed Reed able to patrol the whole back of the field by himself. It allows that other safety to play up a little closer, take away the middle of the field and help on run support. You know, and that's because of Ed Reed.
And Ed Reed was playing 30 yards back.
Way down.
Way back.
He was playing strictly for Moss.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the one time the Patriots went deep, he ran by Ed Reed like he was standing still, and it was underthrown, but it didn't work the one time they really needed it.
Now, apparently Welker was held quite a bit.
Is I don't know. I mean, Brady was yelling about it on one play. I know that, you know. So.
But that's what I would do.
Paul wants to argue with you again.
But all I said that Brady was yelling about it on
but
one
that's
play.
What, no, but that's what I would do.
I didn't laugh at that.
I would.
I wasn't laughing at that.
What were you laughing at?
I just knew there had to be a reason that Wes Welker only had three catches. That's all.
I would hold him, though. Let the officials
being
call
covered
it.
By a practice squatter.
You know what I mean? Be physical. If you have to hold, hold. Let the officials call
right.
it.
Right. If that's the game they're going to call, go with
right.
it.
Right. Don't be the Cowboys and let them run freely through the secondary all game. Right. If they're going to call holding, let them call holding.
Absolutely. Let's see, TG and NJ, was that Merriweather out there in the first quarter?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Should we turn Maroney into a receiver?
Nope.
No. What happened to the nice little player? We just talked about that. He was held. Screw the Spygate scandal. The NFL has got to fix the officiating. I really don't believe the officials on the field see what we, the viewers, see. Tom made a good point a couple weeks ago on this subject. The officials are too old. The game has gotten so fast, it's like they can't keep up. Along with the technology, high-def, and instant replay, not to mention everybody hitting the rewind pause on their DVRs at home, it seems like having some old men in zebras outfits running around the field just doesn't cut it anymore. I don't know. I'm blaming the whole thing on Polian. Tell Ken Flanders to order up some more number 10 jerseys for Christmas. That's my boy.
Flanders has cooties. Flanders has cooties.
You brought up Gaffney there. We had an Ask PFW. I was interested in your opinions. Fred, even you. His contract is up this year, right?
Pant load.
What do you think? Well, no, there's no need to take a shot at Gaffney.
No, that was actually an emailing about you.
What do you think of Gaffney's chances of being back?
I think they're pretty good.
I mean, do you guys think that there'll be any?
I think
for his services on the open market.
No, and I think he knows who he is. Like I think he's happy to be here with Tom Brady, being a spare part in the offense.
Yeah.
I think he gets along with people here.
I agree. That's pretty much the way I answered the question. In that, I just felt the emailer suggested that he may be in line to get a payday or whatever, and I just said, look, that could happen. I mean, I've seen stranger things, but. My point is, I think that people would view him as a guy who he was out of football, resurrected his career by coming to the Patriots with Tom Brady and being part of a great offense this year. First of all, I think he would recognize that and probably want to stay. He seems pretty comfortable here. And second, I don't think that the rest of the league would be willing to drop big money for a guy who really only did it when he had Tom Brady throwing the ball in his 5 years, 6 years in the NFL.
No, I mean, you might get a team like Tennessee or Buffalo who will offer him money, but those teams need real receivers. They got enough Gaffneys. You know what I mean? Like,
that's what they have. Right.
Right.
They have those kinds of complimentary guys.
Like you said, he seems happy here, and Bill always talks about people knowing and understanding their role. If he does know his role, I think the Patriots would love to have him back in the same role.
Especially if you lose Moss or Stallworth.
Yeah.
Or both. I mean,
Troy. And you
and
don't
Brady
have
to like
I'm assuming with Troy, but I'm saying you have right now, you have Moss, Stallworth, and Welker as a great, three-man receiving show, there's a good chance that you're going to be without at least one of those guys, and that'll give Gaffney more of a chance. You know, yeah, I'll take another 2-year deal for, you know, for $1 million each or something like that, something around a little more than the minimum, and he could be a big part of the offense again. You know, I think
Patriots fans will turn on him if he's in that role again.
Well,
I think you'll see more of the drops than the touchdowns in the back of the end zone.
But I think Brady trusts him because he goes to him in big points of the game. I don't think if Chad Jackson was out there, you would see Brady throwing to him in the corner of the end zone with the game on the line.
Karthik says, this was the most crazy game I've ever watched. In the end, I did feel embarrassed to take the victory. I think we got too many chances, and we don't deserve this win.
Wow.
Forget the ref calls. It's always give and take. We did lose a game against Denver in the playoff due to a bad ref call, and we did win a playoff game against Oakland due to a bad ref call. So you always have to assume that it evens out. My concern is that the way the Patriots played the game against a 4-7
Fred doesn't like this guy.
Baltimore
He's not.
Apparently not.
You have such an all-around talented team. The opponent had key injuries to their starting quarterback, starting tight end, and their main offensive line guy is coming back from injury. Brady was awesome as usual. When Ravens took out Moss and Welker, Watson had so many chances, and I stopped counting the number of drops. Even Falk and Gaffney dropped one.
It was four.
Moss also dropped a TD.
Oh, Gaffney's drop. I forgot about that on the sideline.
It's like a team of droppers. There were so many chances to put the game away.
And best offense in league history is now a team of droppers.
I still think it's best offense in league history.
So many chances to put the game away, and we didn't do it. I kind of get a feeling that we are playing like 04 Colts, and we might get all the offensive records and still not win the Super Bowl because we can't play tough football.
Wow.
P.S. Maroney played well. I think he needs some backing from the offensive coordinator to involve him in more plays. So, anyway.
Does this team have a problem with toughness? We've had some ass PFWs with that. He sort of just referenced that. Is this not a tough
football
team?
Rodney referenced it. He said we got bullied around.
No, I know.
We got bullied.
I thought that happened in other years.
But he was talking about that one game. In general, is this not a tough football team?
I have a hard time characterizing a Patriots team under Belichick as not being tough. I don't know how you guys feel about it. I agree with Rodney's assessment. I thought they got pushed around the other night.
And a lot of people believe the offensive style lends itself to not being a tough team.
Yes.
And I think there's something to be said for that because I always said you can't flip on the switch in just December and say, offensive line, fly out 72 times in a row.
Should that affect you defensively?
I don't know.
The only thing I would say, Paul, is maybe the defense doesn't have as much urgency when you play with such a great offense. Because last year we kept talking
that's a good point.
That they knew they needed to make stops in the red. They knew it. Maybe mentally they just aren't.
Especially with that offense last year.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm just maybe that has something to do with it. But maybe they're just getting a little older. We said that at the beginning of the year, and it didn't seem to matter early on. But now here we are in December. You know, hey, Vrabel's no spring chicken. These guys are getting a little bit older there, and you never know. Let's see. First, Adalys Thomas.
My God, Bart Scott looks like he was ready to kill somebody. I'm just watching the video of the Ravens locker room.
And I was standing next to him.
Do they have the exact same locker room as the Patriots?
I don't know.
The Ravens?
I thought this was video of the Patriots locker room.
It looks pretty similar.
It's very similar.
The same
is that one of the ones that we looked at? We looked at that with PSI Net, right?
Yes, is that the same company?
Yeah, it's
HOK.
HOK, you're right. Yep.
Well, they did an okay job with
M&T. What do you guys think of Adalys Thomas?
I expected more out of him.
You expected more.
Disappointment.
Okay. Yeah.
Disappointment.
Yeah.
No question, because now he's on the outside disappointing.
It's one of those that you heard so much, and I thought I saw so much in training camp of him moving around that, I thought he would do more.
Let's see. Quadwo is from Texas. He says, people love you all the way here in Texas. I just want to ask, if the Patriots happen to face the Vikings, would Adrian Peterson even need an offensive lineman against this defense? It seems like Belichick's tapes aren't helping him. I noticed in the Browns game that the defense was weak. I hope he gets this sorted out quick. Mind you, I am a big Pats fan.
The natives are restless.
Well, Fred doesn't think you're a Pats fan because you're looking at things, you know, objectively. And according to Fred, you shouldn't be doing that as a fan.
See, these are the New England fans I actually love, because this is what I am. 1 week, Super Bowl 16-0, baby. We couldn't stop Adrian Peterson if we had to.
No.
I love these people.
Look,
flip it like a light
switch,
baby.
With that passing game, Adrian Peterson would be lucky to get 10 yards.
I think you would be... I think you could blow off the Eagles game as an aberration. You know, the passing game, okay, we didn't get any pressure, but there's nothing special about what the Ravens did Monday night with Willis McGahee.
No.
And... You know, we talked about this a little bit. I don't think the Patriots thought all that much of him when he was in Buffalo, from what we've been told. And they could not stop him the other night. They had to sell out on those last couple of drives to slow him down.
And just a quick point of fact here, Andy, you asked me about Arians, the offensive coordinator for Pittsburgh. One thing he likes to do is get the ball down the field. If I was Pittsburgh, you know the Patriots are going to come in here saying they're not running the football on us.
Right.
I'd come out like they
Lee
did,
Flicker, first
like they
the
did against Denver, Paul, in that AFC Championship game, and fake the run and throw the ball down the middle of the field. Because if they expect Willie Parker to come out here and do what McGahee did last week, they're going to be very disappointed.
Right. By the way, just a quick update. I saw that Tomlin said that he hopes Polamalu, Marvell Smith, and Holmes will practice and potentially play this week, which are big question marks.
So I hope all Steelers fans hope that.
Yeah. No, but he said they're going to I actually don't buy it because everything I read didn't sound like this week was going to be a very positive scenario for them. But they're all going to practice today and try to go.
I hope they do because when the Patriots beat them, I want them to be full strength.
I wouldn't – if I were you, I wouldn't be hoping because if Santonio Holmes play, I might want to pick – I might change my pick by the end of the week.
But he wouldn't be 100% probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Besides, he's not going to be. Neither was Roy Green, Bill?
I don't think he'll be much of a factor coming off a high ankle sprain.
But the defense they're playing, they'll make Nate Washington look like a Pro Bowler.
Jimmy in Orlando, hey, bitches, need to vent. I've listened to the Bull all day on sports shows in the whining babies calling preferential treatment for the Pats by the refs and calling it a conspiracy. If anything, I saw more no calls on the Ravens, mugging our receivers in contact after 5 yards, not called. Even Tom had words with the refs on no calls.
Even Tom?
Not this Tom, the other time.
No.
Even Tom.
Tom has words with the ref every time he's hit,
Fred Leitz,
every time a receiver is touched, every time anything happens, Tom has words with the ref.
The Ravens were bringing it, and it's fine, but I felt that the game was being decided by the refs, and if it wasn't for the blunder of the Ravens coach calling a timeout, the Pats would have lost. Next concern, I hear analysts saying the Pats are not as good now as they were a month ago. I tend to agree, but I'm looking for the weather. I'm looking at the weather for that reason. Are the Pats receivers going to figure out how to catch a cold ball?
So you're the Colts and the Rams. You've now admitted that that's what you are. You're the Colts. That when everything's fine, because I'm hearing this from Patriots fans now, if the weather is okay.
Well, that's not good.
Right, because you've become the Colts.
That's a concern.
It is.
And you're playing at home.
I didn't think it would be much of a factor at all. I'll be honest. I thought that this offense was so good. They could throw short, throw long. You're still going to have to respect Moss, and they have. You've seen what Ed Reed was the other night, despite 40-mile-an-hour winds.
But I just didn't know Moss couldn't catch it.
Let me ask you, though. If they played the Colts in the AFC Championship game, obviously the weather affects both sides. Say it's the Steelers, and it's windy, it's snowy. Doesn't that give now the Steelers a better chance?
Yep. It might. We'll see. We'll see how the Patriots finish out this month. But it might,
because
got a big quarterback. He can make plays on his feet.
But you don't have to defend the deep ball quite as much, because in a windy game, you can't throw a lot of passes down the field to Moss.
Plus,
when he was wide open, it was underthrown, the one deep ball, and I think that was with the wind, the Randy Moss play down the sideline that he blew by Ed Reed.
Yeah.
Underthrown.
The wind was funny in that game.
Yeah, it was going.
But I think that was with it.
It wasn't in that direction. It was definitely with it, but I think it was kind of.
If you looked up high into the flags on top of the stadium, it was dead, you know, left to right all game.
But then
when it came down, it was, you know, changing direction a little bit.
I think it was more from our right to left in the press box was the wind was going in that direction.
Consistently, you're right. Yeah, but it did switch a few times.
Yes, it did. It did seem to give the players a little problem with
figuring it out. Glenn in Calgary, for the second consecutive week, the Patriots have been extended by losing teams with mediocre quarterbacks. Defensively, they have looked old and slow, while the offense has lost its precision. They are looking very much like a team that is running out of gas.
Offensively, we talked about this, I think, last week a little bit. Are they also in the transition phase where throwing just to Moss isn't working, and they're kind of learning that they have to do some other things, and it's not coming so easy, and they're maybe trying to, you know, we see Watson getting thrown to more than he has been unable to make the plays. Are they in sort of a, what are we now as we adjust to the adjustments against us?
I think you got to have the running game. I'm sorry. I got to have some semblance of a running game.
I kind of agree with you, Fred. I don't think you have to run the football 30 times. But like that game against the Eagles where they just chose, I don't think you can do that every week like they did with Minnesota last year.
I mean, when were they
best? You
can
do that in one game.
Sammy Morris was running for 100 yards.
But I think you can take one game.
I don't think that's when they were best.
Well, they were running.
They were best when they were putting 50 on the board.
Yeah, I think for one game you can take it and, you know, spray it all over the place. But I think Andy's point is the best point, where a lot of times offensive lines, when they don't run block a lot, they lose some of that physical nature because they're used to pass protecting. And now you're asking them, okay, let's get down and dirty
here. Especially this one. It's not an overly big, powerful group. They need to be firing off the ball to get it done. And They haven't been asked to do it much.
I just think
maybe if they were running the ball when they were up by 50.
I think that we're being a little tough on the offense.
Well, I think so, too.
Because I think when you score as many points
as
they've scored...
Well, I'm just talking about the running game.
No, I understand. No, I don't think they run the ball very well at all. But I think that when you score as much as, and been as productive as this offense has been, all of a sudden you go from scoring 40-something or 50-something, and then now you're on 30, and people are like, what's wrong with the offense? I don't think there's that much wrong with the offense.
I just think the drops. I don't care about points.
They've dropped some passes.
Too many dropped
they've dropped some
mind.
Passes, and that's why they've
but
scored.
Those are individual.
But that's why they scored 27 the other night instead
number
of 38.
Of different individuals.
Now, as opposed to this next emailer, Rob from Brisbane, Australia, who says that Josh McDaniel sucks. Can McDaniel stop screwing around with this empty set offense? It hasn't worked, and Brady has been sacked 6 times in the past 2 weeks because of a lack of a running game. That's one more sack than the rest of the season. Why doesn't he go back to a single-back offense and 3 wide receivers and Ben Watson? Doesn't matter if we only average 4.5 yards a carry running it. It balances the offense. And I know that Brady had 2 TD passes dropped against the Ravens, but McDaniels is only making it harder on the offense. Plus, Brady needs to get rid of the ball quicker. We all know that he can sit back there for 10 minutes a snap. But what happened to taking what the defense gives him? We are beating ourselves at the moment.
I know I'm the president of the Josh McDaniels fan club, but I'm under the impression that he doesn't come up with any game plan that doesn't have the Bill Belichick stamp of approval.
Yeah, I think the game plans have been fine. You know, when the Chargers had their great offense, I always remember my father saying something. When it was like 3rd and 1, they'd get a 10-yard penalty, and my father would say, that's better for them. They'd rather have 3rd and 11 than 3rd and 1. Now, I think where the running game comes in, on the short yardage where we saw the fourth, when they got that 5-yard penalty, yes. You know, Paul said to me, well, now you know they're going to get it. They're just going to play pitch and catch.
Right.
So I think that's the part where the running game might come in, is on short yardage. To me, that's where they seem weak on offense. But like, if it's 3rd and 10, I think they're going to get it every time.
And
so I'm not really concerned about the game plan or anything.
Maybe they've realized Lawrence Maroney's not very good. And if they don't have a very good running back, it would be dumb with these receivers and Tom Brady to just go out there and say, we're going to stay balanced.
I don't have the numbers to back this up, but I also don't think that this empty set backfield is something that was unveiled the last 2 weeks. I think they used plenty of it, and they've used plenty of it all year. They've used plenty of it last year
when
they didn't have anybody. I just think that
Evans was out there sometimes.
They like to do that. They like to go empty.
They're using their strength, Tom Brady.
They like to spread the offense around, and that's exactly, Tom.
And I think every team would like to do it nowadays, if they can, because of the depth on defense.
But you have to have the quarterback to do it.
That's
why, because everybody can get pressure off of that set.
Right.
But with Tom, that's not enough to just get pressure. You have to identify where he figures everything out so quickly. That's why it'll be interesting, I think, to watch this Pittsburgh game this week, because when they're going defensively, they're creating pressure the way they want to do it. They're doing it with a lot of those Dick LeBeau zone blitzes, and that requires Brady to do some different stuff in terms of identifying. It's a little bit less obvious. Maybe that bothers him a little bit. I don't know.
Right?
I mean,
a dozen different guys, I think, have recorded a sack for them.
Yeah, something like that.
They come from all directions.
A bunch of guys with like 2
but
or 3.
You might look at it and say, okay, I know it's coming, and you might identify it properly as to where it's coming from, but you might think that the guy that ended up dropping into a zone is the guy that was coming,
right.
and you thought that was the hot guy, and maybe you throw it right to Kevin Henry for a touchdown.
That's the beauty of that when it's working well.
The Steelers' defense, I know they played an easy schedule, and not a lot of great offenses, but they've only given up, I think, over 300 yards twice, which is pretty impressive. So if you can hold the Patriots
especially
around 350, you know, in that area, then you got a shot.
Yeah. You're talking about 300 yards of total offense?
Yeah.
Wow, that is impressive.
I think their pass is like 180 yards a game.
I don't think they do it by covering, because I don't think Ike Taylor and D'Shea Townsend are top flight cornerbacks
like
in this league.
Townsend.
I mean, holding
he's
any quarterback
nice
in this league under 200 yards.
Well, he had a pick in your first game.
Yeah, and I talked to him. He was a nice fellow.
He's a nice fellow, says Tom.
Mike in Windsor.
Who is this?
Who gives a rat's ass?
Mike in Windsor Locks, Connecticut. Do you guys have the background on what happened that caused Harrison to go in front of Billick during the game and get kisses blown to him?
Yeah,
Billick
he never
or his
shuts
team?
Up.
Yes, James Sanders intercepted a pass.
And he was in the general area and yapping, as he always is, to somebody.
Do we know what Harrison said to Billick that made him do that?
No, he just said he was talking, having fun like I do. He's a great coach. And he caught me off guard with the smooch.
I think Rodney was a little embarrassed by that.
And I'm married, and I'm not that type of guy.
Yeah, that was funny.
Going all Ozzie Guillen on him.
Yes, I want you to say, what type is that?
What do you mean by that type of guy?
Andy in Sioux City. Another week where the Pats just couldn't match the intensity of the other team. Can you blame them? How do you get up for a 5-5 and a 4-7 team?
the Eagles and Ravens really only had the Patriots left on their schedule.
Ask Randall Gay, you collect a paycheck.
So it was their playoff game. There are plenty of things to be concerned about, but I believe when the game becomes important to the Pats, they will play with more heart. All I care about is a 14-2 finish at the least, and I don't care if they are undefeated. I want that number one seed and a sweep through the playoffs. I think they will be ready for the Steelers, and maybe they found something with Maroney catching passes out of the backfield. I can't believe the offense hasn't adjusted better to what these last two defenses have done to them, and where is the pass rush?
Oh.
So. Let me ask you this. What do you think it's easier? Is it easier for a player on an 11-0 team to get up for a game or on a 4-7 team?
I would say 11-0, but I don't know.
I mean, am I crazy on that one? What do you think it's easier to get up for a game for?
4-7.
When you have no hope
for January 1.
When you have no hope and you're playing out the string, is it easier to get up for that game or is when you're about, you know, set to make history?
That's right.
I think you're taking away something from the Patriots by saying they haven't had any heart in these last two games. You know, like, well, when the game means something, then they'll start playing.
I think it's an easy way to kind of whistle past the graveyard and pretend there are no problems. And I'll tell you something else. If we're satisfied with going 14-2 at this stage, that would mean, in my opinion, that you finish the season at the minimum playing five of your last eight games, maybe. Not really the level that you would
like. Limping into the postseason.
Three of the last four, they've been down to the wire and didn't play great games. And then they would have lost two more if they go 14-2. So that's five times minimum that you didn't really play as well as you've been playing in the first part of the year. I don't think that's the way you want to go into the playoffs.
And I think that's the biggest issue. We talked about it on TV yesterday. Bill Belichick's teams are always better.
Always. They always play better
December,
now than they
post-Thanksgiving. Yeah. You know, the numbers they always put in the release late in the year of how good their record is and how well they play, and it's going in the other direction this year.
The only time it wasn't true was 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't make the playoffs. Even in 2000.
They're not going to make the playoffs?
Even in 2000, when they were a terrible, terrible team, they played better in December than they did the rest of the year. I think they went 2-2, but they played good games. They played better brand of football.
Sam in Denmark. That was worth getting up at 2 a.m. on Tuesday. I could hardly breathe during the entire fourth quarter.
Because your heart was in your chest.
I was surprised to see only one screen pass called the entire game. I thought it should be effective against an aggressive front seven such as the Ravens. There have been a lot of drop passes in the last three games, starting with Buffalo. Do you think it has anything to do with the cold weather? The defense stunk until it was almost too late to stiffen up. It's official. The Pats can't tackle. The rushing defense was atrocious, and the pass rush once again lacked authority. I thought Falk had a good game, even though Maroney was still less than effective on the ground. He didn't dance around as much as he used to, which is good to see, and he did have the two big runs after the catch. On a side note, I think it is disgusting that Ray Lewis, Drew Rosenhaus, and God forbid, OJ, are using Sean Taylor's death to gain publicity.
Well, I would say that the way this guy sounds, they're getting a top five draft pick, but yep. They're getting a top five draft pick, so.
That's true.
What's OJ got to do with
anything? Yeah, what did OJ do?
I don't know.
Did I miss something? What did Ray Lewis do?
Well, you saw him on the sideline.
In the conference call, I thought he used the Sean Taylor as an out to not talk about actual issues of the week.
I did.
And I saw him trying to mosey up some tears on the sideline.
Okay. I missed something. I didn't see that. The
onion,
conference call,
onion,
I agree with.
You were listening
in my
to
eyes.
Northeastern basketball at the time.
The conference call, I totally agree with.
Watch that terrible team blow a lead.
Oh, man. If they had lost that game, I may have not watched the Patriots.
It's funny. You and I pumped our fist at different times when I was looking at that clock ticking, and I'm going, yes, they're getting closer. He's going to erupt. They're getting closer. He's going to erupt.
Well, the funny thing is they were way ahead, and I turned to Andy and I said, that team will blow it. They always have big leads and blow it. And then he hits me like 10 minutes later and goes, it's down to four.
18-point lead, Tom. 18-point lead. Went all the way down to one. And then some stiff who doesn't even play hit a three-pointer to stem the tide for us.
Scott from Washington, D.C., he says, I was at the game on Monday night and I have a few things I thought might be worth mentioning. First, I have been to a lot of Patriots away games, Buffalo, Carolina, Cleveland, the Jets, Washington, now Baltimore, and I don't think I've ever seen fewer Patriots jerseys in the crowd as I did in Baltimore, for whatever that's worth.
Well, I saw a lot of Patriots. We talked about it when we were at the ESPN zone. There were a ton of Pats jerseys. Well,
Dallas would be the only one I could think of that had less of a Patriots influence. I did notice that. There wasn't a lot of Patriots influence.
It was a record, too, at the stadium.
71,000,
Most ever.
Dallas don't allow that kind of crap.
Although Green Bay,
unless you play for the Packers.
It was a 50-50 split. Green Bay, it was
like
a home
bowl games where you look at the 50-yard line
and you
one
see the colors.
Color on left and one color on the right.
During the melee of penalties at the end, the refs actually missed one. While the refs were conferring about Bart Scott throwing the flag and some of the beer bottles that were thrown into the end zone were picked up, one of the Baltimore DBs, I think it was Winborn, took off his helmet and hung his head.
He's right.
Almost leaning against the goalpost. Removing your helmet is a penalty. It's one the refs missed with all the other chaos going on.
That
but
did
I mentioned
happen.
It
I saw it.
As a footnote, no need to pile on to all the other stuff. Third,
oh, that's nice of you.
Third, I was surprised the wind wasn't more of a factor because the tailgate beforehand was probably the coldest I've been since the Tennessee-New England playoff game. And finally, does it seem to you that if our receivers had caught some of those balls that hit them in the hands, then we might just have blown out the Ravens, or at least won without as much drama? Certainly, Brady's performance was a lot better than his stats indicate.
Yes.
Yeah.
The receivers sucked.
But as
I wouldn't say blowout, but I would say won a lot easier than
it
was.
But as Patriots fans would say, when we were talking about the one play that Feely made at the end of the game, and a caller called up on ESPN radio and said, you're talking about one play. You could go back and say this,
right.
and this. So I would say that's all part of the game.
Yeah, I also didn't hear after the Indianapolis game when Reggie Wayne dropped a short touchdown, I didn't hear any Patriots fans saying, do you think it would have been a different game if Reggie Wayne caught the bomb for a touchdown?
You can relive every game and go over it.
Those are plays.
Those are
plays that have to be made.
Good or bad.
Those are plays that have to be made, and the Patriots didn't make. They haven't made in the last couple of weeks. That's why the games have been a lot closer.
26-7, December, January, regular season games under
Belichick. Look at what the Patriots have done up until Philly. I mean, it was almost flawless execution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when any team is that flawless in their execution, they're going to win. You know, so it's like the plays. You know, every play is written up to be a touchdown.
Right.
You know, and if
only you're the only one that thinks that every play should be a touchdown.
Right.
Especially every
Heath Evans goes down
especially,
again.
Especially
he had this one.
Especially every running play.
He should have
cut back.
That fullback dive should have went for 80 yards.
There's nothing better than, like, when Maroney gets stuffed for 1 yard and I look to the right and there's Fred shaking his head.
Fred, but that's what I was talking about with the offense, and I think the production has been still pretty good.
Yeah, I do,
too. If Andy's drops that he's talking about with Moss and Watson, obviously, I mean, you're getting 3 instead of 7 all of a sudden. So, I mean, you could have been up around 40 if you had done the things that you've done all year.
I think the thing is, too, is the last two teams have made him earn it.
Yes.
Instead of just throwing one pass.
It's looked different.
It looked way too easy at the beginning of the season. Even we were saying nobody could even make him sweat a little bit.
Right.
It was only
the very first drive of the night. The field goal drive was the only one that was easy because they had the long pass to Stallworth down the sideline. Everything else, you know, even that last drive was 13 plays, that last drive. It was a 2-minute drive.
And you talk about
it took
making
him 13
him earn
plays.
It. Moss hasn't earned it. They've been beating him up, and I said the big play last week against the Eagles, you know, I've come to the point where if it hits his hands, I assume he's going to catch it. Well, not over the last 2 weeks, I'm not at that point. And people propose the theory early in the year, Mike Felger being one of them. What's Randy Moss going to be if teams get in their face, bang him around, play a little defense on him? And since they have, he's been an average receiver.
And you wonder if the weather has maybe helped teams
play that
style.
When's the last
time he
made a great catch where we go, oh, Randy Moss, laugh. I mean, he's just not doing it anymore. You know, he was doing it 2-3 times a game in the first few weeks.
Just a quick side note, Fred. Brett Fraud is expected to start this week because they're playing the Raiders. I'm sure if they were playing the Patriots, he'd come in so he could start, play one play, and then beg out like he normally does in big games.
Let's see. This is Chris from the Bronx. I know you've probably gotten a ton of emails about the officiating, so I'll make this quick. If the Ravens have any grudge this week, it should be against specific calls, but rather the overall inconsistency. The refs are to blame for letting them play for most of 3 quarters, then calling illegal contact and holding when they occur in the fourth. If the officials had put the clamps on the Ravens from the beginning, then they could have loosened up later on, kind of like a teacher being demanding in September to set up the bar, to set the bar before easing up as the semester rolls along.
I never reached that bar.
Will the Steelers be able to get away with holding receivers beyond 5 yards this week? Amazing how the Pats of 07 have in some ways become the Colts of 03, but they're playing in a Bill Polian rules-enforced world and should reap those benefits.
If I were the Steelers, I'd do the same thing. I look at the
until
Ravens.
Until they stop me, I would. Absolutely.
Just keep hold. That's what Bill did.
Yeah.
Bill did it until they told him he couldn't do it anymore.
That's right.
And I still think you do it because, let's be honest, it's like when you see, like,
20 cars parked illegally, you pull over and go, they're not going to tow all of us.
Right.
You keep beating them up. If they throw one flag, you keep doing it because are they really going to stop the game every single time and throw a flag?
Exactly.
The ref will get sick of throwing it sooner or later.
You have to be physical with the Patriots or you're going to get killed.
Oh, by the way, Strippers has sent you a video of the guy breaking the world record for bench press, Tom.
Oh, okay.
Is this
like,
a new one?
It's like over 1,000 pounds.
Well, there was one on YouTube that we saw a while back.
Was that one of you?
No, I'm topping out at about 800 these days.
Okay, and I'm topping out at about 125 these days.
You can bench 800?
Yeah.
You can? Really?
You're kidding.
How many times?
You're an idiot.
I don't know. This guy's benching over 1,000.
So you think Tom is only 200 behind the world record?
You think I can bench 800 pounds?
Well, I saw you lift a truck with your legs.
That's legs. That's different.
A truck. And it was a leg sled.
I don't care. It was like...
Yeah, Andy never does legs, so he makes fun
of
people.
I can tell.
You
got little chicken legs.
I know.
What the hell's going on with those toothpicks?
Not as little as Samari rolls.
He even bats things away onto Samari roll.
Yeah, but he's in shape. You're not in shape.
Not anymore,
you got those little chicken legs coming out there.
I didn't see you at the gym, though, on Sunday, Monday. How was the gym? What'd you think of the gym? Was it a nice gym, Fred? Well on your way to those 35 pounds. Gaining them, not losing them, you fat bastard.
He can't take it. He just can't take it.
He starts yelling in the middle.
Do the chickens like have large talons?
Let's see. Louis in Tampa, Florida. The Patriots looked like the 0-2 version when every team ran at will against them. But in the fourth quarter, they had consecutive three and outs. Since I didn't notice anything exotic in those stops besides eight defenders in the box, I asked the following. One, why did they fail to make that adjustment quicker? Two, is Junior Seau still trying to find Willis McGahee? Three,
that was funny.
That was almost a Chad Brown-like moment where it was just laughable.
Do you foresee a switch to a four-man front to ease the pain from watching Brewski?
Well, they tried
that.
They did that.
That's what they were doing.
They did both, but neither worked.
Four, should we expect anything from our overpowered pal, Chad Brown, I guess?
No.
And five, does Eric really enjoy being padded in the rear?
Yes.
Yes.
He likes other things in the rear, too.
Now, you know, that's just not right.
Are you going to discipline him, Fred?
That's just not right.
Let me ask you guys, is there, at some point, can you do too much? Like, oh, we're 4-3, we're 3-4, yeah. We're done, we're doing this now.
I tried to write that the other night, Tom, but I couldn't.
Don't you just, maybe now with things not going that great, try to simplify things and say, we're getting back to the basics, this is what we do. You hit the gap, you tackle, blah blah blah. Instead of saying, "Okay, we're 4-3. Now we're switching to 3-4. Yeah. Now we're doing this. Now we're doing that."
The only thing I'll say is, I don't think they change their fundamental principles.
They don't.
They're a two gap team.
Yeah.
Either way, 4-3 or 3-4.
And I asked specifically about
the blockers, so I don't know that it's as much changing their philosophy as just we need to get one of the linebackers off the field to get one of the linemen on the field.
Right.
He's doing the same thing. He's just lined up in a three-point stance.
Yeah, I tried to go in that direction, Tom, but I broke the Nick Cafardo rule of journalism, whereas I had a story idea that I wanted to write, and I ruined it by asking questions about it and then not giving me the answers I was looking for.
Right. I usually just ignore those quotes.
Right. Well, basically, I asked, first of all, if it was an effort to search for a way to stop McGahee is why they were switching back and forth so much, or if it was part of the game plan. And they said it was part of the game plan. We're multiple in our defensive sets, blah blah blah. So I had to check one off the list if they were maybe struggling one way or the other. And then I said, but the techniques are generally the same, either way. And if they were different, then you could maybe make the argument that going in with a game plan when you're asking guys to do different things depending on the personnel on the field might be asking a little bit too much. Yeah, but they all said, I talked to Ty Warren about it, and he said, yeah, you know how we play. It's always, we're always two-gapping. He goes, the only difference is, and he talked about the bubbles. I love bubble talk. The bubbles, there's more bubbles on the 3-4. There's three bubbles with one and two bubbles with the other. And basically what it came down to, guys, was technique in terms of the guys up front, and bad tackling in terms, I think, of the guys in the next level. And he said that the bad tackling was because of the bad technique. We were putting guys in bad spots.
I'm blaming the guys up front.
That's basically what Ty said.
Because I'm taking theory with the same as I said with Mike Wright. He's Mike Wright. Teddy Bruschi is a 17-year linebacker at this point. You're not Richard Seymour. You're not Vince Wilfork. You're not Ty Warren. You're young. You're fat. You're paid. You're first-round picks. Control a game.
I agree.
Shannon says
fat and happy, not fat, fat, because they are fat too. But
right. I yeah, just I, it wasn't their best effort. I didn't think.
Shannon says, "What a bunch of whiny douchebags! Throwing helmets, throwing officials' flags, crying.
Oh, I thought she meant Patriots
being
fans.
Restrained, blowing kisses, talking trash. You know why? That's the mark of a 5-straight-loss team. I completely lost my respect for the Ravens.
Patriots fans.
Hey Ray, don't you have somebody you should be murdering somewhere? Wow. And on behalf of all the true Cleveland Brown fans out there, I'll say this. Screw you and your STD ridden sisters. Ridden, I think you meant Baltimore. That being said, please beat the Colts next week, will you?
STD ridden sisters? What does that mean?
Something transmitted diseases.
Sexually.
Sexually. Oh. I know what STD means. I just didn't really get the reference. Are there a lot of STDs in Baltimore?
You learn something new every day here.
It's good to know next time I'm in town.
Just think it was not necessarily having anything to do with Baltimore. I think it was just ripping the Ravens because they were actually upset that they lost the game on a penalty.
Got screwed.
Steve writes in from Edmonton. He's got a which one was contest.
So this isn't the guy who called in, Steve from Edgerton.
I don't know.
Steve from Edmonton.
He says the object of this game is to choose the option you think was better, worse, funnier, etc. Okay, one. Ready? Which was worse? Kellen Winslow not getting the force out call on the last play, or the fact that force outs are not reviewable?
The fact that they're not reviewable.
Not getting it.
Two, which one was worse? The Ravens' final drive and post-game collapse, or an unnamed speaker at Sean Taylor's funeral who used his time to talk about banning guns instead of remembering a good man?
The latter.
Jesse Jackson, I think.
The latter.
Yep.
What good man were they remembering?
Three, which was dumber, Brian Billick calling a timeout on 4th and 1 or Joe Gibbs calling a second timeout in a row?
Joe Gibbs. A mile.
Which was better, Tom Brady's fourth quarter performance or Eli Manning's fourth quarter performance?
I'm going to say Eli Manning this time.
I will too, given the circumstances and the ability level of the player. I've seen Brady do it 9,000 times.
That really saved their season,
too. Yeah,
it's
just Brady being Brady.
Yeah, that saved the Giants' season. They lose that game, they'd be in big trouble.
Yeah.
Five, which is more enjoyable, Tom Casale's Cowboy strut or the fact that we're 12-0? I'll say 12-0.
I don't give a rat's ass about either.
Last question. Did you see Samuel get molested by Derek Mason on the last play? Why wasn't that called?
Didn't see it.
Because it was a Hail Mary, and they never call anything on Hail Marys.
They're never going to call it. Let's see. Quick question. This is from Josh in the UK. If you could trade Maroney for Reggie Bush right now, would you do it?
Yes.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
I would, too.
I think you can do more things with Bush, even if he's not a great runner. I'm done. I'm going to the bathroom.
That was a good one.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree with Tom. I'm not going to repeat it, but I agree with it.
The upside of Bush is phenomenal.
You just simply cannot teach.
Let's see. Dave says, I think the win was a huge factor. One thing I haven't heard from anyone, the Ravens' field goal. It was going wide left, and the wind blew it to the right through the goalpost. You could see the gusts that changed its direction completely. That was one of the weirdest games I've ever seen with many really unusual plays.
Don't you think... you know, kicker that's been around for 20 years takes such things into account when he's kicking. I mean,
by the way, did you really see the gust?
Right,
see
he probably the wind? Took it. Yeah. Let's see. Pat Kerwin has his top 5 things the Pats must work on, and it was sent to us by strippers.
Okay.
So the number one thing they have to work on is the clock in Tom Brady's head.
Huh? He's holding the ball too long?
He was holding it a long time out there. I mean, he could, but.
That
I
wouldn't
mean,
be the number one thing I'd be working
I was giving
on.
Credit I don't think to the
it
Ravens
be,
for that.
I don't even think it would be in my
break,
5.
Break the top 10 for things that need work. I mean,
I agree.
I have plenty of other things I could find that this team needs to improve on in the coming weeks.
Number 2, he says, is balancing the offensive attack.
Sure, but.
Well, not if you don't have to.
Or can't.
Yeah.
If they believe they can't run the ball, they're not going to try.
Again, I'm going to go back to Andy's point. I think that anytime Tom Brady's involved in a problem, that's probably not one I need to have very high on my list.
Three, route and formation adjustments.
What?
I'll defer to him on that. I don't know that much about the
4, work on the first down defense. First down defense.
I think work on defense would
defense.
Be.
And clean up the third down defense.
Yeah, see, I think those two together and say work on defense.
Work on defense. I actually think they've been very good on third downs, and the Ravens were terrible on third down
they
the other night.
Were. Neither team converted.
3 of 11, if I'm not mistaken.
One was 3 of 11, one was 2 of 12, so I don't know which one went where. But.
So I don't think, with all due respect to Pat Kerwin, I think I went 1 for 5 on that list.
Brian from Honolulu says, easy on the Irish. I'm Irish and Sicilian, so I make people offers that I am too drunk to remember.
I like that.
That's good.
I like that.
Second, is
There's
it time...
a shock you were drunk.
Second, is it Irish. Time to move to a 4-3 and limit the reps for Brewski and Seau?
They've done that.
What about moving...
This is three of the last four games they've played four-man fronts for a big portion of the games. And they opened up the game the other night in that.
Lastly, do you think it would help the running game to use two plays from the old playbook, bubble screens, and the two tight ends on one side, running plays to the strong side?
I don't know. I still go back to Andy's thing where when you never run it, then you're asked to.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see too many two tight end sets this year. I mean, they have had some of those this year, but I don't think you're going to see – I don't think that's their best personnel. I mean, that means you're taking Welker or Stallworth off the field, and I don't think that's in your best interest.
Let's see. Got a ton of emails, and I want to thank everyone for emailing.
Are you going to read any that came in today?
I'm trying to get to all the ones that Sandeep from Herndon, Virginia. Being an out-of-town fan, I really appreciate everything you do on Pats.com Radio, channeling Stephen A. Smith. However, I don't know, what does that mean? However, can you
that's
guys
what
he, take
that's what
turns
A. Smith
speaking
says.
So that the guy with the pierogi in his pie isn't his pie hole isn't speaking? I hope that's not asking for much.
I don't know what you're
talking
about.
Take turns. I don't know. Tom and Paul, the last time I checked, fan was short for fanatic. And a lot of fans don't want to see both sides of the story. Let's just agree that all fan bases have fair weather, irrational, moronic, and intelligent fans. It's not limited to Patriot fan base. Having said that, a lot of Patriots fans do forget it was one of these questionable calls that set the wheel rolling for the current Pats dynasty. But come on, find something else to whine about and stop picking on the fans.
All I'm asking is when I watch a game and I see, like, say the Cowboys get a pass interference call on them and it's not pass interference, I start laughing and say, what a terrible call. That's all I ask is that you do that. Don't email into us and say that was a good call because you're insulting our intelligence. That's all I ask.
I'm not even asking that much. I think that there are plenty of bad calls. As you know, I'm the king referee basher on this show. I think the referees do a lousy job from week to week in all the games. I don't think there's anything wrong with complaining about bad calls against your team. I think I still remember the 05 one that we were all talking about with Asante Samuel. It was a terrible call. What I don't understand is how anybody could criticize Ravens fans for complaining about the officiating the other night.
Well,
when that's all the Patriots fans do. That's all Patriots fans do is complain about the officiating. And not only in games that they lose. Now,
all that Patriots fans do?
They complain about the officiating every time they lose, and now every time the game is close, it's the official's fault.
That's all we got, and ask PFW.
So how can you then complain about the Ravens complaining about the officials?
You complain about it.
Fred.
And I have no problem with that, but you're complaining about the Ravens doing the same thing.
But they weren't bad calls.
In your opinion, they weren't.
They weren't.
In their opinion, they were, Fred.
But they weren't.
That's the only thing I'm saying.
Stripper says,
Fred, let me ask you,
I don't think it was a bad call either.
Fred, let me ask you a question. The last two games, the Patriots have shown a lot of heart coming back, winning those games. They probably could have lost either one. But do we get emails about that? No. All we do is we get emails about the bad officiating and games that you won.
Usually people don't put pen to paper or fingers to keyboard unless they're bitching about something.
We have had 3,024 emails asking us what number 91 on the back of the helmets means. So don't give me that crap.
That's his excuse for anything like that. When everybody said the website sucked, well, people don't tell you if it's good. They only tell you if it's bad.
Stripper says, explain to Tom what a fan is. Fan comes from the word fanatic, a person motivated by irrational enthusiasm as for a cause. A fanatic is one who can't change his mind and won't change the subject. Winston Churchill. So real fans can't look at their team objectively.
Really? Hey, Andy, do I have a tattoo?
Yes.
Is that a fanatic?
Yes.
Thank you.
That's stupid.
I think it's fine, by the way, that fans look at it from their side.
Stripper,
I certainly do.
Pull Tom's password, but leave mine okay.
I would never make fun of other teams' fans for doing the same thing that I do.
I'm a football fan, too, though. I have a favorite team, but I am a football fan. And when something happens that isn't right in football, I don't like it. So maybe that's where I'm different.
Kent says, though it's hard to criticize perhaps the best offense in the NFL history, I wonder if one of the reasons Maroney's production isn't what we would like it to be is because of the style of the offense. Most of his runs are coming out of shotgun formation. His hesitation going into the line, in my opinion, is because he isn't running out of the tailback position with the QB under center. I found it telling that his best play came with Brady under center off a play-action pass. Two, As to your comment about Pats fans being hypocritical about being on the right side of the call, I think you are being unfair. There is a big difference between Pats fans complaining about phantom calls against Samuel Moss, etc., and Ravens fans complaining about obvious penalties, most of which weren't called. I doubt very much that Pats fans would have complained about that play. I know I wouldn't.
Well, you're wrong. If you think Patriots fans wouldn't have complained about that call, you're wrong.
Well, he wouldn't. He's just saying.
I'm just telling you what would have happened.
Okay.
As I said, if Tom Brady had run for a touchdown on that play that they called a timeout on, and then they had a replay and they got stopped, that would have been the play of the game.
You are right for this point that the true blueprint is the one BB devised in 03 for the Colts. When Polian changed the interpretation of the rules, the Pats eventually changed their offense to reflect it. Now we are seeing it implemented by the opposition. I think it will be interesting to see how the Pats react to it. Since they will be seeing it for the next 3 weeks, it will also be interesting to see how the refs will react to it.
So we know what that means.
Well, now they're letting people grab again.
Really?
Yeah.
They got called four times the other night.
He just starts cracking up.
I don't know what that means.
Tim says, Andy's question. Andy, like, I don't know when this actually came in, but he said, the Ravens just got screwed. Does he really believe that? And tell Casale to stop talking into the mic with a mouthful of food. It's the little things.
I only did it once. Then I'll do it again if I feel like it.
I was going to say,
you'll still listen.
If you send food.
I can't wait for the next time that we get lunch so everybody's just eating.
Yeah, I do. I think the Ravens were unlucky. I think every season involves
luck. But did they
luck.
Get screwed?
By luck. Yeah.
I don't think they got
by
screwed.
By luck. Okay.
Yeah. No.
Lady Luck was definitely
not on their
side.
No,
Lady Luck was not on their side. I don't think they got screwed.
And I think that
though.
Happens in almost every game, every season, every championship, every record, all that luck is involved.
Absolutely.
Do you want to know what the play that I haven't heard anybody talk about at all, just as an example, not of getting screwed, just of blatantly bad luck, was, I want to say, the second down play on the last drive.
The ball that was in the air for 3 hours?
20 minutes. 20 minutes that ball was hanging in the air.
Ed Reed picks that 7 times a game.
That's just
picture perfect.
It's plain and simple bad luck. That ball gets intercepted, I would say, 75 to 80% of the time. When a ball gets deflected that high in the air, there are way more defenders around the ball than there are offensive players. That's just bad luck.
And maybe it's just meant to be.
That's why I think there's no doubt they're going 16-0.
Pat on the back / luck is, I think, the Ed Reed interception. I think Kevin Faulk did a good job
great play
of squaring him up, but... You see a guy get squared up all the time, and he doesn't fumble on that play.
Cost him 3 points.
Reed should know who he's playing. I want to ask Bill this in the press conference. Maybe someone else already has in previous years. I don't know. But does he teach his offensive players to do that? Because
yes.
Faulk definitely went for the ball. I mean, yes. He reached up for the ball, and we saw Troy do it.
Teddy Bruschi talked about it yesterday, okay. That they watching film of Ed Reed and all the game-changing plays he makes.
He holds the ball.
He's loose with
he
the ball.
He is loose with the ball because he is trying to make so many plays. It benefits him a lot because he makes
so
plays.
So there's coaching possibly giving you one win this year because Bill Belichick identified that, told his players that if they score there, perhaps the Patriots never win that game. So that's how important coaching is.
They were at least going to get three there unless Stover missed the field goal.
Let me ask you a question. What, as a Patriots fan, now put yourself in the shoes of a Patriots fan for a second.
This is going to be hard, but I'll try.
What would you feel more comfortable with in this Pittsburgh game? Patriots losing the game but playing tough defense, giving up maybe 14 points and losing, or winning the way they did in Baltimore?
Anything that has winning next to it.
With the defense just being
could care less
again.
As long as they keep winning.
I'm going to go with the Andy / Tom theory. I'd rather win than lose.
Okay.
Yeah.
But no marked improvement in the defense is what I'm saying.
No, I want to keep winning.
Okay.
No, I'd rather keep winning
four
because
four games away.
Yeah.
What would make you feel more comfortable?
Winning. Not if they lost.
A 31-28 win would make me feel better than a 14-10 loss.
And then going to play the Jets.
And I'll
the
tell
Dolphins.
You why. A 14-10 loss would tell me not only I have some concerns on defense,
but now I have concerns on offense.
Len says, "If the refs...
what's your answer to that? By the way, you pose a little question. You'd rather have
I'd
the
rather
close
win
loss?
No matter what. I
okay.
I'd rather win 50-49. Len, if the refs had overruled Gaffney's TD catch with the three penalties that the Ravens racked up, would the next play have been first and goal from the 1 yard line for the Patriots?
Yes,
I think it would have been two penalties, and it would have been the 2 yard.
Yeah, I think
because
it was the two.
The defensive offside happened on the extra point. That hadn't happened yet.
Two half
it was
the distance,
two,
15 yards.
My guess, right? So it would have been first and goal from the two.
And goal from
four to two.
Yeah.
I mean, if they indeed – now, I'll tell you what would have been interesting is they were arguing on that play, and they got unsportsmanlike conducts based on arguing that play. If it gets reversed That's a real kick in the stones for Baltimore.
Remember we saw that? Oh, we saw that earlier this year. A play got challenged. The guy was arguing the play. The play got overturned, and they still got the 15-yard penalty.
For spiking the ball.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a real kick in the stones for Baltimore.
I just have to say one thing to the Raven fan that threw the flag back. Why'd you throw it back?
I can't believe it.
Put it out in your pocket so fast that you don't know. Security can't get it.
That was one of the funniest moments that I've had covering, watching Bart Scott.
The other thing
that,
is, why is Ed Reed going around picking up beer bottles? Did you notice that? When they were all arguing, he just goes around like Good Samaritan guys starting to pick up beer bottles.
There's always one of those guys.
Man, didn't care for his attitude in the locker room.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I think you might be right.
We were talking about Ed Reed being
he's now a Patriot.
Well, okay. We were talking about Ed Reed being like,
we were trying to actually be serious.
Why hasn't he become the leader of that defense over Ray Lewis? And in the locker room, he was laughing and saying, "Hey, Bart, so-and-so's here, man. That's why we lost." And Bart Scott was like, "Yeah, I know he's here." Like, he didn't want any part of it. But Ed Reed didn't seem to be taking the loss all that hard compared to a lot of his teammates.
Did you ever have one of those games, like in high school, where you felt like things like that were going against you and everybody was mad and there was always one guy? No, they got the call right. There was always one guy on your team. They got that call. You shouldn't be arguing, you know? And you just always wanted to hammer that kid into a locker. I'm sure you did, Andy, because you were a bully.
I was not a bully.
Scott in Queensbury, New York. Sometimes the calls go your way. They didn't go our way against the Colts. That's why you can't overly blame the officials, because sometimes calls do go your way. What happened on the right side of our defense against the runs? The Ravens could have gone the entire length of the field 8 or 9 times running to the left side. Wow.
Well, you were undermanned. You had Richard Seymour over there.
I
didn't notice any difference either side. I got to be honest with you.
I think they did run a little bit to their left a little more. But
yeah, a little bit.
That's where their guy
I thought it was awful. I thought it was awful the whole
They kept running that seal play where they were trying to get McGahee in the hole there.
No, now I'm thinking of it, there was a couple of big runs that I can think of to the left side. Touchdown run being one of them.
I heard Mortensen on ESPN say the 92-93 Cowboys would have run right over this year's Pats. What I like about this
Tom with the swagger back,
almost breaking his neck, nodding with approval.
What I like about this year's Pats and this year's Red Sox balance, I'm a little too young to remember in detail the 92-93 Cowboys.
Me too.
Well, we just spent the whole show talking about how they don't have balance, so I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. A couple weeks ago, I said that they wouldn't be able to keep up with the Patriots, but now I don't know how good the Patriots run defense is. Because if you don't have run defense against that team, you don't have a shot, because they will maul you to death. They will just maul you, and then that opened up everything for the passing game. So we'll have to see as the season goes on. Let the season play out. Let's see how good the Patriots are at the end of the year. Then we can start comparing them to these teams.
We might look back and laugh and say this was a two-game hiccup, and they get this all together, and they're playing great again over the next month.
They could blow out the Steelers, and everything will be fine.
Or we might say, well, the writing was kind of on the wall, and we didn't see it soon.
The only thing about this is not a two-game thing with in terms of periodic struggles against the run, periodic struggles tackling.
See, I think the biggest is the pass. I was surprised that they were able to give up the run that they did.
Yeah.
But the pass defense, in my mind, has stunk all year.
And I was going to get to that, too.
This hasn't been
periodic. Again,
even Carol Hardy came in today and say, how come Ellis Hobbs can't cover anybody? And for her to start ripping people, that means you stink. You are the worst Patriot that's ever put on a uniform.
I think there's some truth to that. And we've been talking about it all year. It wasn't necessarily showing up, because they were just burying teams so badly that the game plan for the other team had to go out the window. But I think the opening drive, while they didn't always give up points, the other team, even really bad offensive teams like Washington, the best drive Washington had the whole game was the very first one. They got 4 first downs, they got into Patriots territory, and then they got stopped on a third down and had a punt. And then the Patriots ended the game with
Trent Edwards,
an offensive
his first drive,
onslaught.
They moved down the field.
And they scored, and they went for a touchdown.
There was another one. Derek Anderson was moving the ball through the air.
And they threw the pick in the end zone.
So, it's been there all year. That's the one.
Even in games they've won handily.
That's why I was surprised about the run, because I generally go into a game assuming you can't run on the Patriots to win.
I would never. Tom put it absolutely perfectly. If you told me that was how Baltimore was going to do it, I would have laughed and said there's no chance.
I kind of agree with Bill. I never thought he was very good.
Right.
Josh.
Well, in college he was great until he blew out every ligament. His knee. Sorry, stretch.
Josh from Arlington.
And then it went.
Why would we not make fun of the Ravens? They did commit the penalties. How is that the same thing? You complain about a bad call, not complain about your team giving the game away with penalties. They had a ton of penalties all game. They should not have been on the Sports Center yesterday crying about it.
The Sports Center.
So there. That's
my point.
Let's see. Not bad luck getting screwed. Does he think that got screwed like he's... I don't know what that means. Tim, you got to...
Damn it,
punctuate,
Fairfax.
Right, verbs.
I don't care about the Ravens fans complaining about the calls. I do care about the Ravens players complaining about the calls. When the Pats lost to the Colts and the Broncos in the last two playoff games, they didn't come out afterwards and say they were robbed, and the refs had it in for them. Maybe us fans did, but the players just said they could work harder next year, next game. It's fine with me if the Ravens fans complain, but the Ravens players came off as very low rent. They didn't just complain about calls. They complained about a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, there's a difference between players and fans, certainly.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Wasn't Brady complaining this week about missed calls?
Brady complains on every single incomplete pass and every single time he gets hit.
I think where Dan is right is they were talking about the game not being on the up and up, and I think that's taken it
but
a little bit.
But you were right.
That's stupid.
They were frustrated. We know that they're an immature, emotional team. They just had a game that it was their Super Bowl. On paper, they shouldn't be in it, and they feel like they should have won. They lost it a little bit. I got no problem with that. They're emotional.
Just to fill in some blanks, Hizam writes in that OJ attended Sean Taylor's memorial and was taking interviews.
Wow. What a scumbag.
I didn't know that.
He really is.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of PFW in Progress. We will be back tomorrow, Thursday. We apologize. We've got a ton of emails. Didn't get to a lot of them, but we'll do our best tomorrow. See you then.